You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Sarah Turner. The U.S. Justice Department announced yesterday that German computer memory manufacturing giant Infineon Technologies AG has agreed to plead guilty to international price fixing. The company conspired with other dynamic random access memory manufacturers to cheat Dell, Compaq, Hewlett-Packard, and others. The company will be required to pay a $160 million fine, the third largest price fixing penalty in U.S. history.
United Food and Commercial Workers Union locals in California have begun shopping for allies in Colorado and Ohio. Contracts covering more than 60,000 supermarket employees in San Francisco, parts of Colorado, and Cincinnati all expired on September 11th. UFCW locals from those three areas have begun negotiations toward an alliance. According to representatives of the UFCW, the massive unification is an attempt to give support to one another if contract negotiations turn into a fight. The alliance comes nearly a year after the nation's longest ever grocery strike and lockout in Southern California.
Contrary to the current trend, J.P. Morgan announced this week that it will rehire 4,000 outsourced IT workers. Just 2 years ago, J.P. Morgan agreed to a $5 billion outsourcing deal with IBM, at the time one of the largest in the U.S. A company spokesperson said the employees are being rehired due to a recent merger with Bank One, which he said strengthened J.P. Morgan's technology infrastructure.
On Wednesday morning, after a night-long occupation of a Canadian paper plant that closed unexpectedly, disheartened workers returned to their homes. 400 workers were out of a job when the New Brunswick Pulp and Paper plant announced it was suddenly closing Tuesday. The plant, owned by Parsons & Whitmore of New York, said the closing was due to the high cost of wood and rising Canadian dollar. Union representatives at the mill are encouraging the workers to contact local officials who they blame for allowing the company to leave New Brunswick too easily.
Today's Dow Bob Report. Working women spend twice as much time as working men taking care of children and doing housework, according to a recent survey by the U.S. Labor Department. 78% of women and 85% of men hold jobs, but only 19% of men reported doing housework daily, compared to two-thirds of working women. Women also spent an hour and a half caring for a family member. The average man spent only 50 minutes. You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
No, not the yacht.
Darling, wake up. You're having a nightmare.
Oh, it was terrible. Oh. I dreamed we lost our billions, and we were middle class.
There, there.
We were both working, and we could barely pay our bills. The children had to go to public schools. Oh. We had something called an HMO.
Oh, you poor thing.
It seems so real. We couldn't even afford my Botox.
Oh, sweetheart, go back to sleep. I'll write another campaign check tomorrow.
President George W. Bush, keeping alive the American dream. For some of us.
Easily paid for by billionairesforbush.com.
Corporate advertising is everywhere. I don't mean on radio, TV, billboards, and other commercial spaces. I also don't merely mean that it's in our public schools, yammering at us in elevators, catching us by surprise in our parks and museums, and otherwise intruding into our community spaces. I mean it's everywhere. I know you're thinking, Hightower, there you go again with the gross exaggeration. But I'm not exaggerating. You want gross? Meet the latest advertising advance, Whizmark. That's whiz as in take a whiz. Yes, we're talking about male urination and the advertising potential therein. Perhaps you think that I'm going to go on a tear about the little TV screens that many places are now putting above the urinals so you can watch an ad as you, well, whiz. But no, that would be almost civilized. I'm not talking about advertising above the urinals. I'm talking about ads in the urinals. Indeed, ads you whiz on. You know those plastic urinal screens that also deodorize? Whizmark has now accessorized them with ads. Not some bland printed ad, either. Dr. Richard Deutsch, creator of the Whizmark, has brought to us the world's first, are you ready? Interactive urinal communicator. He offers one that has a motion detector. When a gentleman steps forward to do his business, a ring of flashing lights are triggered in the screen, drawing the gentleman's startled attention to your corporate logo, safely protected in the middle of the screen by a waterproof casing. Or if that's too subtle, Wismark offers a voice and sound model with a microprocessor that shouts ad slogans and corporate jingles at the urinator. Still not tacky enough? Got you covered. Dr. Deutsch has the patent on a radio frequency model that can read your ID card and personally greet you when you step up to the urinal. Hey, Frank, good to see you again. This is Jim Hightower saying, I don't even want to know where the ad hucksters are taking us next.
Hi, my name is Sophie. For 5 years, I lived alone in this big house Joe and I built 35 years ago. Our girls grew up in this house. They visited every couple of weeks, and I loved seeing my grandkids, but most of the time I was on my own. Some days I didn't even go out. I just felt sad. Lonely, I guess. One day my daughter came over and said, "Get your coat, Mom, we're going for a drive." She wouldn't tell me where. When we got to the ASPCA, I got nervous. But once I met little Stevie, everything changed. Stevie's my cat. It's hard to express what a difference little Stevie's made in my life. It's mostly small things, like hearing his ridiculously loud purr. Stevie brought love back into my house. I may have saved his life, I don't know. But I do know that he made mine a lot brighter.
This is Richard Thompson, member of the board of directors of the ASPCA, encouraging you to visit your local animal shelter and adopt a cat.
Uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
Well, today I'm going to get rich. Maybe you will, too. We'll see. Richard Coro of Santa Fe, New Mexico, has been standing on the street corners with a sign saying, Well, here it is. To collect your reward, you must verify to me in writing, using any official finding of any agency of any government, that President Bush knowingly lied about any issue affecting the United States of America. And he puts his phone number up there. Bottom of the hour, we're going to have him call. Or we're going to call him. And we'll see. You know, we'll see. Do I get my $1,000 or not? Or if you call in, will you get yours? But first, welcome to our program. Tom Hartman here with you. Another day. It's the Thursday, the 16th of September, 47 days to regime change. Tomorrow we'll be broadcasting live from Grand Rapids, Michigan, WTKG, our affiliate there, and from the Celebration Cinema. Folks are invited to show up and all that sort of thing. There's a spot you can hear about it. I don't have the phone number right here. But in the meantime, interesting stuff. I've been talking on this program for a couple of days about the possibility. And, you know, I know it sounds like kind of, you know, conspiracy nut stuff, but the possibility that Dan Rather was set up by the Republicans. And the reason why, of course, being to discredit the messenger and thus fog the message. It's called fogging the message. And, in fact, Dan Rather himself is talking about this. Let's actually start out with Dan Rather. You know, since all the right-wing sites, they've all been told, please don't talk about Kitty Kelly. So they're instead talking about this, what do you call it, document gate or something, 60 Minutes gate. They've come up with some name for it. Anyhow, Dan Rather says, with respect, right, he's speaking to George Bush. Here's Dan Rather of CBS News. With respect, answer the questions. We've heard what you had to say about the documents and what you've said and what your surrogates have said, but for the moment, answer the questions. This is Dan Rather's response. This from an article in the New York Observer. Mr. Rather asserted that the lack of denial itself was evidence of the essential truth of his findings. The questions raised by his reporting, he said, have remained unanswered by the Bush administration. This is an article by Joe Hagan. In the paper today's New York Observer. Did Mr. Bush get preferential treatment for the Texas Air National Guard? He has denied it in the past. Is that denial a lie? Was then Lieutenant Bush suspended for failing to perform up to Texas and Air Guard standards? He has denied it in the past. Was that denial a lie? Did then Lieutenant Bush refuse a direct order from his military superior to take a required examination? He's denied it in the past. Was that denial a lie? Dan Rather says, and I quote, "It's never been fully, completely denied by the Bush-Cheney administration or even the White House that he was suspended for meeting the standards of the Air Force or that he didn't show up for a physical. The longer we go without a denial of such things, this story is true." And then Rather really hits it. He says, "I think the public, even decent people who may be well-disposed toward President Bush," being a little generous here, Dan, but anyhow, "understand that powerful and extremely well-financed forces are concentrating on questions about the documents because they can't deny the fundamental truth of the story. If you can't deny the information, then attack and seek to destroy the credibility of the messenger, the bearer of the information. And in this case, it's change the subject from the truth of the information to the truth of the documents." I'm still quoting Dan Rather here. "This is your basic fogging machine," Dan Rather says, "which is set up to cloud the issue to obscure the truth." And as I have pointed out, this just absolutely, absolutely, in my mind, sure does seem like the work of Karl Rove. I mean, this, and today Maureen Dowd in the New York Times echoed my vast right-wing conspiracy theory. Well, I can't say it's mine. There's a lot of people saying this right-wing conspiracy theory. Mr. Rove, of course, by the way, the guy that there's kind of a broad consensus that the leaked White House, the leaked identity of the White House. By a senior official in the White House of the CIA agent who happened to be the wife of Joe Wilson 466 days ago, more than a year ago, to Scumbag for Democracy, John, what's his name, loves to call him on The Daily Show, John Stewart, Robert Novak. I'm beginning to think it's an appropriate appellation. Anyhow, Joe Wilson talking about Karl Rove.
At the end of the day, it's of keen interest to me to see whether or not we can get Karl Rove frog marched out of the White House in handcuffs.
And, being a diplomat, when he tosses a name out, he's not just guessing or just being bizarre. In fact, he says, he continues.
And trust me, when I use that name, I measure my words.
Yeah, the former ambassador for the United States. George Bush's take on this, of course, somebody in the White House committed what his father calls treason, and he says, well...
And I don't know if we're going to find out. The senior administration official, now, this is a large administration, and there's a lot of senior officials. I don't have any idea.
Yeah. So, again, now we've got, Congress, Republicans in Congress wanting an inquiry into the documents used in 60 Minutes. It may really be that that's the last thing they want. I mean, here, and why? Because it could end up the same as the investigation right now is looking like it was Scooter Libby who outed this stuff to that sleazoid journalism pretender, Robert Novak. Yes, please quote me. I have lost all respect for Robert Novak. I actually, at one point in time, actually had some respect for the man, but in any case, back to this. It's increasingly looking like it was either Karl Rove or Dick Cheney's office that outed Valerie Plame. And maybe it is. These are the sources. See, here's the trick. Here, as Maureen Dowd, she says it very articulately today in the New York Times. In this vast left-wing conspiracy theory, it's actually a right-wing conspiracy, Mr. Rove takes real evidence on W's shirking, this, the National Guard and all, transfers it to documents deemed to be exposed as phony, thereby undermining the real goods, then funnels it through third parties to Dan Rather, Bush's 41 nemesis on Iran-Contra, Bush 41's nemesis. You'll recall Dan Rather's the guy that George Bush Sr. got so angry at that he was sputtering and stuttering on television. And, you know, I don't think that that's been forgotten. This is a family that nurtures grudges, that does not forget its enemies. So anyhow, Maureen Dowd goes on to point out, the secretary for W's command squadron commander in Texas National Guard told the Times, the New York Times, that the information in the disputed memos is correct. It's just that the memos seem fake. 86-year-old Marion Carr Knox, this is the secretary of Jerry Killian, says, it looks like somebody may have read the originals and put that together. She told Mr. Rather, again quoting here from Maureen Dowd, that her boss, Lieutenant Colonel Jerry Killian, wrote a cover-your-back file. Keep in mind, the title of his memo was CYA. A personal journal, this is using her words, to keep a, end quote, to keep a record from the politically connected Bush in his charge. She said the contents of that mirrored the CBS documents, but she said that those documents were not in the right forms and contained Army terms rather than Air National Guard argot. She confirmed that young Bush had disobeyed a direct order from Colonel Killian to take a physical. It was a big no-no not to follow orders, she said, adding that the Bush scion's above-the-rules attitude caused some snickers and resentment among fellow officers. And then she gets right down to it, Maureen Dowd. Those who suspect Mr. Rove note that when he was Bill Clements' campaign strategy in a 1986 governor's race in Texas, he was accused of bugging his own office to distract from a debate. According to James Moore and Wayne Slater, authors of Bush's Brain, they said it turned the election because after that the Democrat could not get any attention. And sure enough, we see this thing happening all over again. It's just, you know, it's absolutely incredible. So, and now here, the smoking gun. You know, talk about smoking gun. Within 10 minutes of the time that Dan Rather issued his report, on this freerepublic.com website, Tanker KC comes on and says, those documents are not in the style we used when I came into the USAF. Can we get a copy of them? Okay. 3 hours later, another blogger on freerepublic.com, a guy named Buckhead, says every single one of these memos and files is in proportionally spaced font. In 1972, people used typewriters. Typewriters used monospaced fonts. They used proportionally spaced font. Blah-de-blah-de-blah. They are not widespread until the late 70s. Before then, you need typesetting equipment, and that wasn't used. Even the Wang systems that were dominant in the mid-80s used monospaced font. I'm saying these documents are forgeries. Run through. Blah-de-blah-de. Question. How does a blogger have all this detailed knowledge of typography, number one? And number two, how can he know this from looking at a document on the TV screen from 5 feet away when document examiners normally look at this stuff through microscopes and magnifying glasses? And number two. And number three, the website where this stuff was posted happens to be, this quoting another column in the New York Observer by Robert Sam Anson, happens to be the repository for anti-Jewish, anti-Catholic, anti-homosexual, anti-John Kerry rants run by Jerome R. Corsi. And who do you ask is Dr. Corsi? He's the co-author of the best-selling Unfit for Command, Swift Boat Veterans Speak Out Against John Kerry. That's who. That's the blog site. That's the website that, quote, broke the story, end quote, within minutes of Dan Rather getting off the air that the documents were forgeries. Does this smell to you? 1-866-889-8894. Rick and veteransforamerica.com is on the line. Hey, Rick, what's up?
Hey, how you doing, Tom? You're doing a tremendous job out there. I like listening to you. I have a satellite radio.
Yeah, Sirius. It's
I don't mind
one
telling
of
you that I tune to you all the time.
Thank
I'm
you.
I'm one of four brothers that served in Vietnam at the same time. We're surrogates for John Kerry, and we traveled throughout the United States. And let me tell you, I'm letting you know right now that the United States of America, or at least the people that we've talked, are really tired of listening to the rantings and ravings of all of these people that Karl Rove have put up to keep people from really hearing what the real issues are.
Yeah.
You know, it's my personal belief that they do all of these things just so that we won't tend to what the real issues are.
I absolutely agree with you, Rick. Rick, we got a break here. We got to take a break. But I absolutely agree with you. I think that this is part of the vast fogging machine, as Dan Rather calls it, and it's despicable. It's the Tom Hartman radio program, 20 minutes past the hour.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Visit iowapeace.com for books on justice and peace. The Last Liberal Outlaw is Mike Palasek's new novel. Chuck Gregory with BlueEar.com had this to say. Palasek is at his best when writing about small-town America. It's a place he clearly loves, even as he pokes fun at its quirks and reveals the sickness that lies just below the surface. It's a place he knows, and he shares his knowledge in delightfully original ways, even as he cries out for change. We haven't had a writer like Palasek since Kurt Vonnegut was at his peak. Mike is an Iowa author, former federal prisoner for peace, small-town newspaper reporter, seminarian, and nominee for the U.S. House of Representatives in the Iowa Democratic Party 2000 election. For more information and more about Mike's other novels, visit iowapeace.com. The revolution won't be televised, but you can read about it. The Last Liberal Outlaw, A New American Revolution, is happening in the heartland.
For more than 27 years, the Progressive magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. Author and broadcast personality Studs Terkel calls In These Times his bi-weekly tonic. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. 1-800-827-0270.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Due to the rising rate of overweight Americans, more hospitals are being forced to spend money on patient lift systems and specialized hospital beds and wheelchairs. The U.S. Center of Disease Control reports that 65% of American adults are overweight and 31% are obese. Sizewise Rentals, whom specializes in medical equipment for the obese, has reported its business growing 15 to 20% each year.
Think you're not involved in your community? Think again. Spending your money with local businesses is more than an economic choice. It's a way you can have a say in the look and feel of your hometown. By creating a demand for local goods and services, we can ensure a place for the independent businesses that help give our communities character and keep them unique. The American Independent Business Alliance encourages you to get involved. Support your homegrown businesses. Find AMIBA online at amiba.net.
Are you tired of progressives spending all their energy on defensive struggles where a victory simply maintains the status quo? We are too, and we're doing something about it. At ReclaimDemocracy.org, we're taking the initiative to revoke corporate power and restore citizen authority over corporations to enable genuine progress on the many issues that we all care about. Get involved. Visit us online at ReclaimDemocracy.org or call 406-582-1224.
Listening to the Tom Hartman program.
And welcome back. 24 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. We were talking with Rick with VeteransForAmerica.com. Hey, Rick, you wanted to make one other point here.
Yeah, you know, I'd like to invite all the people in the Southwest to join us on a tremendous caravan that we put together. It's going to extend through 35 cities, Texas, New Mexico, Arizona, You can see it on veteransforamerica.com. And let's bring the issues to the forefront and stop letting these people try to make a big quagmire of the media and keep away from the issues.
There you go. Okay. Well said, Rick. Veteransforamerica.com for the caravan for Kerry that's traveling all over the American Southwest. Good on you. Good work. Keep it up.
Thanks a lot, Tom.
Thanks for calling, Rick. 1-866-889-8894. Our telephone number, Glenn in Tulsa, Oklahoma on the line. Hey, Glenn, what's up?
Well, I have the same feelings about Bob Novak as you do. We around here, we can hardly watch him on Crossfire and think he's sort of the modern equivalent of Bob Cratchit's boss.
Ebenezer Scrooge. Well,
The cranky old man.
Well,
personified. But
you know, at least Ebenezer Scrooge had a consistent worldview and held to it. Bob Novak, who is refusing to reveal his sources, now three or four times recently on TV, has come out and strongly, angrily, vitriolically said, "Dan Rather, reveal your sources."
You
like this is the guy who outed Valerie Plame.
That's exactly what I wanted to talk about. I saw it on Capital Gang. And the guy was saying, "Oh, so you're for revealing sources now?" And
yeah.
He says, "Well, not exactly in every case, you know,
yeah.
because he's holding back on
right.
resources."
No, John Stewart has it absolutely right. Bob Novak, scumbag for democracy. It's a tragedy. It's the tragic destruction of an American icon. I mean, the guy actually, for many years, had a pretty good reputation as a reporter, and it's shot. Anyhow, Glenn, thanks for the call, and a good point you made. There. Let's go to Chris in New Mexico. Our telephone number, by the way, 1-866-889-8894. Get ready at the bottom of the hour to earn $1,000, by the way, because we're going to have on Richard Coro, who's offering to pay that to anybody who can document a lie that George Bush has told. Hey, Chris, what's up?
Well, it's going to be a long time before you see any money, no matter what you come up with. I can guarantee that.
Well, let's take the guy at face value. I'm willing to give people a chance.
Already hearing right-wing radio saying that Marion Carr Knox is nothing more than a liar and a self-serving media whore. You know,
she being the former secretary of the 86-year-old former.
Right, right, yes. You know, the take on the right wing is all day long is going to be if those memos are fake, it proves that Bush served honorably, which is just another huge leap of illogic.
Yeah.
Of course, the Swift boaters, whatever they call themselves, they avoided this because they had no paperwork to back up their accusations at all. I mean, none whatsoever. So
no, all the paperwork contradicts their accusations.
Well, you know, and of course, if evidence is manufactured in a news story, it does matter. I mean, we all remember NBC and exploding Cargate way back when. But it doesn't, like Dan Rather pointed out, it doesn't speak to the basic questions. Why didn't Bush take the physical? Why hasn't anybody in that Champagne unit come forward to say they even remember Bush being there for those 5 months? The basic questions have to come out sooner or later, because it is illogical to say if those memos are fake, then that proves Bush served honorably. It's ridiculous.
Yeah. Amen.
Take care, man.
Well said. Thanks, Chris. Thanks for the call. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Who is Buckhead? The guy who first started blogging on the blog site owned by the guy who is the co-author of the book, Unfit for Command, the book about John Kerry and the Swift Boat veterans, the book that is being, you know, flogged all over the place. Who is this guy? Who's laying the stuff out? Is it a pseudonym for Karl Rove? Could it be? Sure, this stinks of Karl Rove to me. I got to tell you, it just absolutely stinks of Karl Rove. 29 minutes past the hour. Stick around. We're going to get rich on the other side of this break. Tom Hartman here with you. 1-866-889-8894. If you have evidence, particularly you can back up with government documents that George W. Bush ever lied in a way that hurt the United States of America. 29 minutes past the hour.
At last, there's a positive focus on a condition that affects millions. Read The Edison Gene, ADHD and the Gift of the Hunter Child by Tom Hartman, best-selling author of Attention Deficit Disorder.
Could it be? Yeah. Sure, this stinks of Karl Rove to me. I got to tell you, it just absolutely stinks of Karl Rove. 29 minutes past the hour. Stick around. We're going to get rich on the other side of this break. Tom Hartman here with you. 1-866-889-8894. If you have evidence, particularly you can back up with government documents that George W. Bush ever lied in a way that hurt the United States of America. 29 minutes past the hour.
At last, there's a positive focus on a condition that affects millions. Read The Edison Gene, ADHD and the Gift of the Hunter Child by Tom Hartman, best-selling author of Attention Deficit Disorder, A Different Perception. John Rady, author of User's Guide to the Brain, says this about the Edison Gene.
Once again, with tireless scholarship and a bit of poetry, Tom Hartman helps take us to the edge of knowing ourselves, our brains, and our world.
The Edison Gene, available in bookstores everywhere.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Sarah Turner, First IT Workers. Just 2 years ago, J.P. Morgan agreed to a $5 billion outsourcing deal with IBM, at the time one of the largest in the U.S. A company spokesperson said the employees are being rehired due to a recent merger with Bank One, which he said strengthened J.P. Morgan's technology infrastructure.
On Wednesday morning, after a night-long occupation of a Canadian paper plant that closed unexpectedly, disheartened workers returned to their homes. 400 workers were out of a job when the New Brunswick Pulp and Paper plant announced it was suddenly closing Tuesday. The plant, owned by Parsons & Whitmore of New York, said the closing was due to the high cost of wood and rising Canadian dollar. Union representatives at the mill are encouraging the workers to contact local officials who they blame for allowing the company to leave New Brunswick too easily.
Today's Dow Bob Report. Working women spend twice as much time as working men taking care of children and doing housework, according to a recent survey by the U.S. Labor Department. 78% of women and 85% of men hold jobs, but only 19% of men reported doing housework daily, compared to two-thirds of working women. Women also spent an hour and a half caring for a family member. The average man spent only 50 minutes. You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.com.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. 27 minutes before the hour. Number one, you want to get on, get on one of these right-wing talk shows that's going, oh, you know, Don Rather got taken advantage of. Phony die. Ask him, how could it be that this information appeared on the website of the guy of Swift Vote Veterans for Truth? An excellent question, I think. Where it first started. Anyhow, well, let's move along here. Richard Coro. Richard, am I pronouncing that correctly? Hey, Richard. Richard, you should be live and on the air.
Oh, hey, good morning.
Hey, Richard.
Richard Coro here in Arizona. How are you doing
today? I'm great. You have been standing out on the street with a sign that says what?
It says that I am offering a $1,000 reward if you can prove a President Bush lie.
Okay. Let's start.
As a condition for ending the Persian Gulf War, the Iraqi regime was required to destroy its weapons of mass destruction.
Yes.
Right.
To cease all development of such weapons.
Yep, we agree.
And to stop all support for terrorist groups.
Actually, that third wasn't part of the provision, but we'll continue. That in and of itself could be a lie, because that was not part of Resolution 1440, but we'll continue.
The Iraqi regime has violated all of those obligations.
Turns out they hadn't.
It possesses and produces chemical and biological weapons. It is seeking nuclear weapons.
That's not semantics. That's him making a statement, an assertion of fact, when in fact he knew at the time that it wasn't true.
No, he didn't know. Now, let's be real on this. Going back to the Clinton administration, it was very clear that the information that they had, that they presented to the American public, was that Iraq had and was developing weapons of mass destruction.
At the time that he made that statement, he was getting reports back from Hans Blix and Mohammed al-Baradei that they were on the ground in Iraq and they could find no evidence of this stuff. They were saying to the United States, tell us where it is. If you know that it's there, tell us where it is. We'll go find it. And the administration was saying, well, no, I don't think that we want to do that. And the few times that we tried to tell them where it was, and they went and looked, there was nothing there. So and not only that, I mean, read Richard Clark's book or any of a dozen other. Read the, what's his name? Anyhow, there's no shortage of information out there that indicates that Bush, at the very least, knew that the CIA was telling him this information doesn't jive with what
well,
we know.
I think the main issue is that isn't the forceful issue that brought us to in conflict with Iraq. The main issue was that the Iraq was not in compliance with the UN resolution.
So you're not gonna give me my $1,000 for that lie.
And no, and you're not even close.
Okay, let's move on.
I'm asked why Iraq is different from other countries or regimes that also have terrible weapons.
Precisely.
While there are many dangers
in
the world,
the
threat from Iraq stands alone.
For our country, but something that we're
because it gathers the most serious dangers of our age in one place.
Iraq gathers the most serious dangers of our age in one place. Now, he knew that wasn't true.
Again, these are all left over from the Clinton administration. Why is it you won't take any responsibility for the information that's been passed on to this administration?
Well, actually, you know, we've had on this program, and perhaps you heard it, the chief weapons inspector during the Clinton administration, who in 1998 was over there looking around for stuff, and he pretty much concluded, and the reports are all there. You'll find this stuff, there's reams of documentation on this.
Dan Rather's running around looking for stuff, too. I mean, he's a very disingenuous person.
Well, let me finish my sentence, Richard.
Go ahead.
What he said was that they had verified that at least 98% of all of the weapons of mass destruction that there was any evidence that Saddam had ever had, much of the evidence, of course, being the fact that we sold it to him, had been destroyed or used. And the three sites that they couldn't get into, and that Saddam was playing games with them. He said, you know, why don't we just take these things out? And so Bill Clinton pulled the inspectors out in 1998 and bombed those three. He pretty much concluded, and the reports are all there. You'll find this stuff. There's reams of documentation on this.
Dan Rather's running around looking for stuff too. I mean, he's a very disingenuous person.
Well, let me finish my sentence, Richard.
Go ahead.
What he said was that they had verified that at least 98% of all of the weapons of mass destruction that there was any evidence that Saddam had ever had, much of the evidence, of course, being the fact that we sold it to him, had been destroyed or used. And the three sites that they couldn't get into, And that Saddam was playing games with them. He said, you know, why don't we just take these things out? And so Bill Clinton pulled the inspectors out in 1998.
Dan Rather's running around looking for stuff, too. I mean, he's a very disingenuous person.
Well, let me finish my sentence, Richard.
Go ahead.
What he said was that they had verified that at least 98% of all of the weapons of mass destruction that there was any evidence that Saddam had ever had, much of the evidence, of course, being the fact that we sold it to him, had been destroyed or used. And the three sites that they couldn't get into and that Saddam was playing games with them, he said, you know, why don't we just take these things out? And so Bill Clinton pulled the inspectors out in 1998 and bombed those three sites. And the conclusion at that point in time was that, in all probability, there's nothing left. And that's what the Clinton administration thought. If they really thought that he had weapons of mass destruction, they would have done something about it.
Then why didn't he allow us back in to verify that?
He never tried to stop us from going in. Clinton pulled the inspectors out in 98, and Bush pulled the inspectors out in 2003. Saddam Hussein...
Well, I think you're supporting my position that Clinton pulled the inspectors out for lack of cooperation in 98.
He pulled them out so that he could bomb without killing his own people. appropriate act.
We clarify what you would consider the first attack on 9/11.
Well, that's an interesting question.
Would that be the first building being hit? That's what I would consider it.
Presumably, yeah. Why?
Because on 9/11, George Bush said that evening on his press conference a statement, immediately following the first attack, I implemented our government's emergency response plans.
Oh, interesting. Interesting.
And that's on whitehouse.gov.
Okay, let me put you on hold, and you can try and share that with Richard. Maybe you can win the $1,000.
All right.
Yeah, let me put you on hold here. Okay, we've got Richard back on the line.
Yes, you got Richard back on the line, okay. And I'm sorry about the phone.
No, it's no problem. As I said after you dropped that I didn't think it was that you didn't want to talk to us, that you're moving and your cell phone is not altogether reliable, as is often the case with cell phones. Richard, we've got a guy in Orlando, Florida, who thinks he's won your contest. Here's Mike in Orlando. Mike, you're on the air with Richard. Richard Coro in Santa Fe.
Hi, Richard. On 9/11. I believe the first attack was when the first tower was hit by a plane. Wouldn't that be correct?
Uh-huh.
Okay, and that evening, George Bush said in a statement to the nation, immediately following the first attack, I implemented our government's emergency response plan. I find it hard to believe that right after the first attack, he implemented his plans, and in between that time on the second attack, he chose to go into the classroom.
Actually, after the first attack, he went into a classroom and started reading My Pet Goat.
Does
Mike get his $1,000?
Not even. Let's be realistic. The point of all of this issue was...
But it's a lie, Mike.
...the reward is whether President Bush intentionally misled the American people.
He did.
And that's what I want to be able to present as being the honest approach to this.
But, Mike, make your point.
In a statement to the nation, he wanted it to look like he was a quick responder. And immediately following the first attack, he implemented his plans. Now, unless his plans included going into a classroom and reading a story about a pet goat, I think he made a lie.
Yeah, this is right on whitehouse.gov, Richard.
It could very well be. But again, I'm talking about, look, the handout that I had, and I wish I had it with me so I could do the verbiage, said that a lie shall be proven by any government agency.
Yeah, whitehouse.gov is actually run by the White House.
But it's not like a car dealer there.
Where's Mike's $1,000?
We're talking about the security of our country, and you're indicating that a good point, that he may have implemented these procedures immediately after the first building. But
which he didn't do. He didn't do. He sat and read My Pet Goat.
So much happened during that period of time.
That it was okay to lie during that period of time.
I think to pick that apart again is disingenuous.
Well, this is a lie after that. This was put up on whitehouse.gov, I mean, some time after 9/11. I mean, this was
at 8:30 p.m. that was released.
Yeah. So,
okay. I'm not familiar with that.
Okay.
I can give you the web address to make you familiar.
Okay.
Have access to a computer?
I'll tell you what. Richard, do you have a problem with my giving your phone number out on the air?
Yes, I do.
Okay. Even though you're holding a sign up in Santa Fe with your phone number on it, you don't want me to publicize it?
No, my phone number is not on the sign. I read to you the exact verbiage on the sign.
Okay.
I give a flyer out to people.
Well, that's fine. That's fine.
It.
I'm not gonna out you, Richard, but what I am going to do is put Mike on hold, and I'll give Mike your phone number, okay, and you guys can work this out?
Okay. Again, I indicated
cool.
I'm moving. This is a difficult time for my family
I understand.
Right now.
I understand.
But,
let's move on to Jeff in Denver. Jeff, maybe you've got one here. Are you gonna win $1,000?
Well, Bush said that he was cleared.
Speak up. Speak up, Jeff.
Yes. Bush said that he was cleared in the Harkin Energy insider trading scandal by the SEC. When he actually was not cleared, the investigation was simply dropped.
And in fact, the head of the SEC wrote a letter specifically saying that Bush had not been cleared, and Bush then later again said that he was cleared. That's a clear that's easily documented.
Yeah, so there's a government agency saying the investigation was not finished. He was not cleared, but very well documented.
Jeff, get his $1,000 here, Richard.
listen, if we got the, it's bad enough I had to stand in a corner and I had 30 against one there every Friday during my lunch hour.
You know, I admire your courage, Richard.
But when I have a national audience here, I'm sure that I'm not well educated and well informed enough, I should say, to be able to counter every single proposal that comes up. My suggestion is that I had asked that these true response be in writing to me and give me the opportunity to respond. So I suggest that they send these particular questions into you and then you get back to me.
Okay, I'll tell you what, Richard. We have a website with a message board on it, kind of a blog board, tomhartman.com. And there's no cost to get in or anything. You know, all you have to do is put your email address in so that we can verify that you're really who you say you are. And so if you want to sign in there, I'll start a thread in there, and we'll let you and our various listeners correspond on this, okay?
That works. But okay. Again, my whole point to all of this is that I think that we have seen here in the last few months a tremendous amount of slander against our president that is ill-founded, obviously all of it. Now, we can, again, nitpick little teeny details, but we can do that about any administration which is politically in power at the time. But my point is that anything that a true lie, that was truly disingenuous.
Yeah, I understand. Here, let me just lay 10 quick ones on you, okay? Number one, I've been very candid about my past. Turns out he hasn't been. Number two, I'm a uniter, not a divider. I suppose that's not a national security thing. Number three,
it's important to be a divider.
Yeah, okay, but he says he's a uniter, so he's lying. Number three, my plan unlocks the door to the middle class of millions of hardworking Americans. In fact, the middle class has shrunk under Bush for the first time since Herbert Hoover. Number four, this allows us to explore the promise and potential of stem cell research when, in fact, he was limiting it. Number five, now I think this is a killer, we must uncover every detail and learn every lesson of September 11th, and then he started aggressively working against both congressional inquiries and the 9/11 Commission, which he fought and fought and fought until he flip-flopped and decided he was in favor of. Number six, we're taking every possible step to protect our country from danger, Bush said. And in the meantime, he has put together no plan for the nation's ports, no plan for the chemical factories, in large part because the chemical factories don't want the extra expense. And, in fact, Warren Rudman, the Republican senator, head of the Council on Foreign Relations Task Force, said that the Bush administration has completely failed in this regard. Number 11, I first got to know Ken Lay in 1994. Turns out Ken Lay had been his biggest lifetime political patron. Another lie. I'm forgetting the numbers here. Intelligence gathered by this and other governments leaves no doubt that the Iraq regime continues to possess. I already played you that one, actually. How about when Bush said in Poland, we found the weapons of mass destruction? Does that qualify? Do I get my $1,000?
Yes, I found that one interesting. There was a gentleman in Santa Fe that brought that information to me, and I was very intrigued by that. And the research that I had a little time, again, is in the middle of a move. I think that response is almost an hour by hour, minute by minute response to the artillery shells that were found in Iraq at the time.
No, he was actually talking about the trailers.
He was actually talking about they
found two trailers which Scott Ritter had back in 1999. Well, these were mobile laboratories, and Scott Ritter in 1999, in a report to Bill Clinton, had said these things were there and they were to make hydrogen balloons for sighting for long range artillery, which is turns out what it was, and Bush knew that, but instead he said, you know, we found Richard,
right,
we got to take a break here. It seems to me that you owe me $10,000. Yeah, sure. I'll tell you what. If you'll hold over the break, we'll let you continue right after this. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program, 10 minutes before the hour.
This is Vionik Raskin. I'm the president and founder of the Organic Wine Company. What happened when you, Thomas, gave us a plug, the phone started ringing. The first person said, whatever it is that you're selling, I want to buy it. And for the next few hours, the phone rang nonstop. The people who listen to your program are what they call in the business my target audience, people who are conscious and responsible and try to do the right thing and try to think for themselves. I would encourage anyone to advertise on the Thomas Hartmann Show, absolutely, without question, whether that be on the national level or the local level, and you will absolutely get results. The way you can learn more about our imported organically grown wines from France is by calling us. The phone number is 1-888-ECO-WINE, or you can visit our site at www.ecowine.com.
Now, it's time for This Billionaire Moment.
A criminal investigation is underway over Halliburton's $180 million payment to Nigerian officials for a natural gas project back when Dick Cheney was the CEO. Critics call this bribery, but in many countries, bribes are just part of the political culture. Why should Dick's company be punished for being sensitive to local customs? You give money to politicians and they give favors to you. We do it all the time here in the U.S., only we call it a campaign contribution, and no one seems to object. South of the border, it's la mordita, the little bite, and in the Middle East, it's bakshish. No matter what you call it, it's smart business. I'm Xenophobe for This Billionaire Moment.
This Billionaire Moment is brought to you by BillionairesForBush.com.
Here come the billionaires!
On September 17th, I'll be broadcasting live on WTKG AM 1230 in Grand Rapids at the Celebration Cinema, noon to 3 p.m. at the corner of Knapp and East Beltline. Drop by early at 11 a.m. in the Wave Room for a get-together, then listen to the show. At 4 p.m. after the show, I'll be at Schuller Bookstore on 28th Street for a book signing. For more information, call 616-776-5541. That's 616-776-5541.
Can you imagine a world in which all kids live healthy, safe, productive, and prosperous lives? Well, that world is within our grasp, and there's a way to reach it. It's called Ecolonomics. And to learn more, just pull up DennisWeaverNow.com and learn how to get a free report of our Ecolonomics educational program and how together we can build a world of prosperity without pollution. DennisWeaverNow.com. DennisWeaverNow.com. DennisWeaverNow.com.
This is a Workers Independent News Service feature story. I'm Sarah Turner. 1,500 unionized federal government workers scored a major victory on Wednesday with an amendment halting the outsourcing of immigration processing work to private companies. The amendment was added to a $32 billion Department of Homeland Security financing measure by just two votes, with five Republicans supporting the Democrats.
There may be some vocations that privatizing is a good thing. However, when it comes to national security and Department of Homeland Security's ability to protect the American public, these are not the positions that should be privatized.
Charles Showalter, president of the National Homeland Security Council, AFGE, says there's been trouble with private companies who've been entrusted with screening immigration applications.
Unfortunately, every time we privatize jobs within the Department of Homeland Security, we run into major problems. Down in California, when a contractor ran behind, they shredded 90,000 applications for benefits within the Immigration and Naturalization Service.
He also believes only trained professionals should be performing criminal background checks.
These jobs are privatized to somebody earning minimum wage to increase company profits. We run a greater risk of people being compromised in the positions that face it. These officers deal with criminal background investigations. They deal with counterterrorism efforts, and it's not the type of information that we want the general public to have access to or even have the ability to manipulate.
The amendment throws a wrench into congressional leaders' plans to recess for the year in October, before the November 2nd presidential and congressional elections. George Bush has threatened to veto the entire funding measure, saying that privatization will improve customer service and save money.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
It's coming through a hole in the air.
And welcome back. 5 minutes before the hour, last 3 minutes or so of our program, we're talking to Richard Coro, who is offering a $1,000 reward to anybody who can document a Bush lie. Richard, let's take one quick call here, and then we'll give you a chance to rebut it in general.
Tom, before you take that call, can I just present a couple of issues here real quick, please?
If there's going to be time for the call, too.
All right. We'll leave you. If you've got 3 minutes, we'll give you time for the call. I want 60 seconds.
You got it.
Let's go. It seems the only issue that you guys can bring up is this issue of weapons of mass destruction. So I just want to relate to Clinton, February 4th, 98. One way or the other, we have determined to deny Iraq the capacity to develop weapons of mass destruction and the missiles to deliver them. That is our bottom line. Clinton, February 17th, 98. If Saddam rejects peace and we have to use force, our purpose is clear. We want to seriously diminish the threat posed by Iraq's weapons of mass destruction program. Madeleine Halfbright, February 18, 98. Iraq is a long way from here, but what happens there matters a great deal here. For the risk that leaders of a rogue state will use nuclear, chemical, or biological weapons against us or our allies is the greatest security threat. Next to last one here, he will use those weapons of mass destruction again, as he has 10 times since 1983. Sandy Berger, Clinton National Security Advisor, February 18th of 98. And lastly, a letter to President Clinton signed by Carl Levin, Tom Daschle, and John Kerry on October 9th of 98. We urge you, after consulting with Congress and consistent with the U.S. Constitution and laws, to take necessary actions, including, if appropriate, air and missile strikes on suspect Iraqi sites to respond effectively to the threat posed by Iraq's refusal
right,
to end its weapons of mass
Richard, you're making my point. He then bombed Saddam. He then went in and bombed all those sites. And then the Republicans started accusing him of using wag the dog techniques for that. Anyhow, let's go to Robert in Santa Fe. Robert, you're on the air.
Yeah, I wanted to point out something else regarding Richard Coro. Last Friday, Richard Coro was involved at the corner where we have the peace rally every Friday in an assault and battery on a peace protester out there. Richard actually hit the fellow with his sign, and then punched him in the face twice, knocking him out of his wheelchair.
Wait a second. Richard,
I let him get it out, but that's a lie.
It didn't happen. I mean, Richard, you're.
Oh, there was an altercation with a guy in a wheelchair, but this guy hasn't read the two newspaper articles that.
You took on a guy in a wheelchair?
The opposite thing. Yeah, this guy's pretty rough. He's, you know, people with paraplegics with upper body strength. I just wanted to stay away from it. This guy, he had a serious motorcycle injury.
Okay, Richard, we're out of time here, but I hopefully I've allowed you to make your point. Thanks for being on our program. I do appreciate it. And good luck hanging on to your money.
Another jerk.
Yeah, okay, good luck. It's a Tom Hartman program.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
The following phone call was not recorded on February 30th, 2004.
Thank you for calling about DirecTV. My name is Lynn. How can I help you?
Thank you, sir. Thank goodness you're there. You've got to help me. My cable company is raising their rates again. I don't know what I'm going to do.
It's okay, ma'am. I'm here to help. I'm glad you called.
They're taking away our favorite channels and charging more. It's just wrong.
Ma'am, I get that all the time. Let me help you right away. Would you like to get over 125 channels of your favorite programming for only $39.99?
Will I still be able to get my local channels?
Absolutely. And because you called American Satellite right now, you can get up to a four-room DirecTV system for free and free professional installation for all new customers with an annual programming commitment.
Oh, thank you. My husband, Nick, is going to be so happy.
Call American Satellite at 1-800-505-1542. That's 800-505-1542. Call now and ask how you can get total choice for only $29.99 a month for the first 6 months. A $60 value. 800-505-1542. At $4.99 a month for second and each additional receiver. Offer ends July 17, 2004. Call.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Sarah Turner. The U.S. Justice Department announced yesterday that German computer memory manufacturing giant Infineon Technologies AG has agreed to plead guilty to international price fixing. The company conspired with other dynamic random access memory manufacturers to cheat Dell, Compaq, Hewlett-Packard, and others. The company will be required to pay a $160 million fine, the third largest price fixing penalty in U.S. history.
United Food and Commercial Workers Union locals in California have begun shopping for allies in Colorado and Ohio. Contracts covering more than 60,000 supermarket employees in San Francisco, parts of Colorado, and Cincinnati all expired on September 11th. UFCW locals from those three areas have begun negotiations toward an alliance. According to representatives of the UFCW, the massive unification is an attempt to give support to one another if contract negotiations turn into a fight. The alliance comes nearly a year after the nation's longest ever grocery strike and lockout in Southern California.
Contrary to the current trend, J.P. Morgan announced this week that it will rehire 4,000 outsourced IT workers. Just 2 years ago, J.P. Morgan agreed to a $5 billion outsourcing deal with IBM, at the time one of the largest in the U.S. A company spokesperson said the employees are being rehired due to a recent merger with Bank One, which he said strengthened J.P. Morgan's technology infrastructure.
On Wednesday morning, after a night-long occupation of a Canadian paper plant that closed unexpectedly, disheartened workers returned to their homes. 400 workers were out of a job when the New Brunswick pulp and paper plant announced it was suddenly closing Tuesday. The plant, owned by Parsons and Whitmore of New York, said the closing was due to the high cost of wood and rising Canadian dollar. Union representatives at the mill are encouraging the workers to contact local officials who they blame for allowing the company to leave New Brunswick too easily.
Today's Dow Bob Report. Working women spend twice as much time as working men taking care of children and doing housework, according to a recent survey by the U.S. Labor Department. 78% of women and 85% of men hold jobs, but only 19% of men reported doing housework daily, compared to two-thirds of working women. Women also spent an hour and a half caring for a family member. The average man spent only 50 minutes. You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
No, not the yacht.
Darling, wake up. You're having a nightmare.
Oh, it was terrible. Oh. I dreamed we lost our billions, and we were middle class.
There.
We were both working, and we could barely pay our bills. The children had to go to public schools. Oh. We had something called an HMO.
Oh, you poor thing.
It seems so real. We couldn't even afford my Botox.
Oh, sweetheart, go back to sleep. I'll write another campaign check tomorrow.
President George W. Bush, keeping alive the American dream. For some of us.
Easily paid for by billionairesforbush.com.
I can't begin to tell you how proud I am of the assaults that Bush, Cheney, and gang are making on America's decorated veterans. Of course, they're all over John Kerry, who's running to depose this regime of chicken hawks. Using a former Nixon hatchet man as their tool, they're assailing Kerry for his 3 Purple Hearts and 2 other Medals of Valor. The Bushites want you to believe that such honors are doled out like prizes and boxes of Cracker Jacks, which is as close as they got to any war medals. But how about Max Cleland? The former U.S. Senator from Georgia doesn't need medals to show his bravery and sacrifice. He came home from Vietnam minus 2 legs and an arm. Yet this is not enough for the Chicken Hawks, who have actually tried to suggest that he didn't deserve his Bathed in the Blood medals. Indeed, when Cleland pulled his wheelchair up to the front gate of Bush's ranchette outside of Crawford, Texas, where the president was vacationing in August, George dispatched his aides to tell Cleland that the prez was too busy vacationing even to accept the letter that he had come to deliver. It was a letter calling on the Bushites to stop their dishonorable political attacks on decorated vets. "Where is the shame?" asked Cleland, sitting in the hot August sun in his wheelchair after George W. stiffed him. Shame? Bush is immune to shame. He used family connections to avoid going to Vietnam in his day, where he might possibly have encountered the kind of injuries that Cleland suffered, though Bush proclaimed that he supported that war with all of his heart. So did Vice President Dick Cheney, who's also now assailing Kerry's war record. Dick, who grabbed 5 draft deferments to keep him from having to face the reality of war, smugly says, "I had other priorities in the 60s than military service." This is Jim Hightower saying, those who had other priorities while cheering the war from afar ought not now be sliming those who put their lives at risk.
This is a financial update. Average mortgage rates took a slight dip this week.
Sorry to interrupt, but LendingTree.com is the only place where banks compete over your mortgage. Then you get up to 4 real offers to choose from within minutes. So do better and choose from low rates. Call LendingTree now at 1-800-555-TREE. That's 1-800-555-TREE. When banks compete, you win at LendingTree.com. Equal housing opportunity. Some restrictions apply. See website for details and licensing.
Hello from the road, folks. You know, the only thing better than a twofer is a threefer. That's why this fall I'm staying at Econo Lodge and Roadway Inn Hotels. See, I get triple Southwest Airlines Rapid Rewards credit every time. So I earn flights 3 times faster. Call 800-4-CHOICE or visit choicehotels.com. We'll see you there.
Offer good for qualifying stays in the U.S. before November 30th, 2004. For details, visit choicehotels.com. Triple credit means 1.5 credits instead of a standard 0.5.
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. We've got a special guest for you in just a moment. TomHartman.com, the website if you want to drop into our live chat room, where I think pretty much everyone in the chat room believes that they won $1,000 in the last segment. The last hour, we were talking with a fellow from Santa Fe, claims he'll offer $1,000. Anybody can prove George Bush told a lie. His criteria got a little tighter and a little tighter as time went by, but Anyhow, welcome back to our program. So glad to have you with us. Tom Terez is the grand poobah of a website called AnotherRepublicanForCarry.com. Tom, pleased to have you with us today. Hey.
Thanks, Tom. Good to be here.
You've been a Republican for how long?
Well, when I was 8 years old, I handed out handbills for Nixon and Agnew. That was in 72, so... I guess that was my crowning beginning in the Republican Party.
Yeah, so you're a lot younger than me, but we have, you know, when I was 13, I was going door to door for Barry Goldwater. So, you know,
is that right?
Yeah, so I guess we've both had an enlightenment experience here. What are the concerns that you have that are so serious about George W. Bush that as a Republican, you would vote for a Democrat for president?
Right. Tom, I'm concerned that when he moved into the White House, he kind of had move in with him the extreme conservative think tanks. And these think tanks have been scheming for 20, 30 years. And then they took 9/11 and used it as a pretext for making some very fundamental and, I think, dangerous changes. You know, we've had this change in our doctrine to preemption. We've had this invasion and occupation of Iraq. And that's something that they had been thinking about since the mid-90s.
Yeah, 98, a whole bunch of them, including Cheney and Wolfowitz and Pearl and Jeb Bush signed a letter to Bill Clinton demanding that he immediately attack Iraq. Yeah,
and then the economic extreme conservatives have led this way on what I think is a tax gamble. You know, this lopsided tax payoff. I call it Bush's Paris Hilton subsidy.
Yeah,
and you know, a third of the payoff going to the 1%. It just doesn't make sense. I'm a fiscally responsible person. That's the way I was raised. And I look at the dried-up Treasury and realize the trade-offs we're now having to make with, you know, shortchanging our homeland security. I just can't stand for it anymore.
Yeah.
And, you know, sometimes you got to step out of your partisan skin and be a full-fledged American, and that's what I'm trying to do here.
Yeah, a true patriot. I, you know, in my opinion, Dwight Eisenhower, Barry Goldwater, Everett Dirksen, people that I actually thought well of in many regards. I mean, I can argue things, you know, about their policies, particularly with regard to civil rights and perhaps their hysteria of communism that in retrospect now seems perhaps misplaced, but or at least hyperblown. But nonetheless, I continue to have respect for these guys. And they if they were around, I'm telling you, if Barry Goldwater is around right now, he would be leading the charge against George W. Bush.
You bet. There's no question about it. And those of us who have, you know, libertarian leanings, for us to stand back while this Patriot Act unfurls, we really have to stand up against some of that stuff.
Yeah, although, and, you know, let me just, you know, before you go any farther here, Tom, we're talking with Tom Terez, who's another Republican for Kerry.com is his website. The libertarian... If you got to be really careful, Tom, because the libertarians are not conservatives. They are fascists. They believe in, and the definition of fascism, as written by Mussolini, who invented the word, is the merger of the corporation and the state. In fact, when Mussolini dissolved the parliament, he replaced it with the Parliament of Fascist Corporations. No longer were elected officials elected in Rome, I guess was the capital of Italy, but instead corporations placed their people. We are moving in that direction. And the libertarians, and going back to the objectivists, back to Ayn Rand's Atlas Shrugged, believe that if it's done by a corporation or a capitalist, all is well. They should be in charge, and you can't trust the people. You can't trust the rabble. They will vote things for themselves like education and welfare and, oh, my God, you know, things like this. And you know, libertarians sound very appealing to people on the left because they say there, you know, there shouldn't be laws against drugs and prostitution and what we do in private is our own, which sounds, you know, good to actually a lot of people on the right, too, and that they're in favor of small government. But what you have to realize is that when government shrinks, a vacuum is created, and something will step in to fill that vacuum. If you don't want a democratically elected government, a government of, by, and for we the people running this country, then you're going to have somebody else. And the somebody else that the libertarians are putting forward are the transnational corporations. And that, in my opinion, is a danger. Do you, as a Republican, agree?
Right. I agree. I think that every Republican has, you know, different lobes in their brain that kind of tap different parts of conservatism. You know, the fiscal conservative lobe, the private property, stay out of my business lobe.
Yeah.
And that's the lobe of the brain that I'm talking about here with regard to the Patriot Act. And, you know, you have social conservatives, you have cultural conservatives, you have neoconservatives. I think those latter three groups may be really rock solid now for Bush. But it's the fiscal conservatives, you know, the folks who are so sick about this $422 billion credit card bill we're giving to our kids.
That's right.
It's those folks and the people who don't like the government poking their nose in you know, their business, who I think can definitely be moved into the Kerry column. And you know, there are things that concern me about this administration, but there's a lot about John Kerry that I really like and I think isn't being told.
That's an interesting statement for a Republican. Tom, what are the things about Kerry that you like and aren't being told?
Yeah, the biggest thing to me is the theme of his whole life has been taking on tough foes on behalf of everyday people and quietly and doggedly persisting and prevailing. And then when he does prevail, he does it with dignity. He does it with quiet honor. He's not the kind of person who's going to suit up in a flight jacket and, you know, theatrically land on a carrier.
Yeah, now that sounds like an abstraction, but just to put some specifics to it, I'll toss a couple out, and maybe you know of others.
Yeah, I've got a whole bunch here.
John Kerry was the guy who spearheaded the BCCI investigation, the Bank of Commerce and Credit International, which revealed the Bush crime family's connections to crime families all around the world, and brought down a terrorist network, horribly embarrassed members of the Bush family and for which they have not forgiven him, and caused them to lose money. But he just hung on that and hung on that and hung on that. John Kerry was the guy who led the investigations into POWs in Vietnam and bringing them back, working with John McCain.
Right.
John Kerry, okay, your turn.
I love those stories. A little footnote on the POW MIA story. Only McCain wanted to team up with him. No one wanted to touch that. John Kerry made 14 trips to Vietnam. In one meeting, he went toe-to-toe with the communist leadership and demanded to be let into the underground tunnels beneath Ho Chi Minh's tomb because there had been rumors there that there were POWs there. He refused to leave until they let him in, and he explored the tunnels himself. He fought organized crime when he was a prosecutor. He put behind bars some of the worst criminals there on the East Coast. He set up victim witness protection plans and programs there, some of the first in the country. You know, the guy took on acid rain before anyone knew what the heck that was. Mercury, sulfur emissions, these kinds of enemies. And, you know, it's a theme of taking on these fights that no one else wants and then persisting, never letting go, doing your homework, taking your 14 trips to Vietnam, doing what needs to be done. And, again, when he accomplishes things, which he always does, again, he's not the kind of guy who's loud and boastful, but is quietly effective. And listen, we've got tough foes now. And we don't need a person who's going to lean toward drama. We need a smooth operator, a steady hand. And reading into his history like I have, that's the kind of person I find.
Yeah. Now, let's talk for a minute. You're still a Republican.
That is correct.
Okay. And I'm not speaking as a Democrat because I'm not one. In fact, the Democratic Party is too conservative for me, frankly. So presumably there are some areas of difference that you and I have. I think it would be interesting to explore them just briefly because it might highlight how and where John Kerry stands on some of these things. I'm assuming if you're defining yourself as a fiscal conservative that you buy into the notion that small government is good.
I think that the right size of government is good, and I think sometimes we just try to tear down and destroy instead of optimizing.
Okay.
And there's no question, for example, in Iraq, that trying to give Halliburton certain jobs that historically troops and government employees would do, that was a mistake. Or, you know, delegating that out to contractors, some of our prison negotiations at Abu Ghraib and so forth, and you know, you just have to question
the interrogation.
So I'm about right-sizing government and not just slashing and burning.
Well, then that's a little inconsistent with the modern. I'd say you're more of a Rockefeller Republican than a modern Republican.
Exactly. And dad's 84 now, and raised during the Depression. The kind of extreme conservatism that we see in the White House now is something that he would find completely foreign to him. And I think there are a lot of Republicans, I get calls and emails from them every day, who say, you know, the party is migrating away from me.
Yeah.
And I'm going to stay a Republican, you know, my kind of Republican, a more reasonable Republican, and I'm going to help pull back the party.
And interestingly, Tom, I think, you know, if you look at the differences between Rockefeller and Goldwater, and Rockefeller actually got booed down at the 64 convention when he stood up and he said, let's be moderate. And then Barry Goldwater followed him and said, extremism in the defense of liberty is no vice, and got a five-minute standing ovation.
Hmm.
But the major difference between Rockefeller and Goldwater was really relatively small. It had to do with how to take on communism.
Mm-hmm.
Goldwater wanted to be very aggressive in the war against communism, and Rockefeller thought, you know, if you leave these guys alone, they will implode because their system doesn't work, and
right.
And we shouldn't risk wars around the world in pursuit of that, which is sort of a variation on what's going on now. It almost seems to me that John Kerry is taking the positions now that Rockefeller was taking then, and many of the same positions that Goldwater was taking with regard to fiscal issues, and that George Bush is, I can't find a parallel. I mean, you know, he's off the scale.
Right. There's no question that George Bush has good intentions. He's a person of faith. I like that. I respect that a great deal. But he's a binary thinker. He sees things in black and white. You're with us or against us. And it's a mismatch for the world we live in. You know, we live in a very gray world, lots of complexity. You have to do nuance in this world. And John Kerry seems like the kind of person who can do that. I was struck by hearing time and again John Kerry talk about his approach to fighting terrorists. And, yes, he talks about using the military forcefully and often, but he talks about other weapons like diplomacy and economic leverage and intelligence and things like this. So, you know, here's a guy who's not a binary thinker. He's not just taking one approach. He's going to use all the tools at his disposal.
Yeah, which just makes perfect sense. I think we're getting right down to the essence of some of these real issues here. We're talking with Tom Terez, another Republican for Kerry.com is his website. Tom, if you can stick around after this break, we've got a caller for you with a question. Our number, okay, our number 1-866-889-8894 if you'd like to ask Tom a question. Another Republican for Kerry.com. Tom Hartman here with you. Be right back.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Who is it?
Special delivery.
Who?
Pizza Man.
Hey, you're not the Pizza Man. You're the cable guy again.
Price Patrol.
No, you're not. I can see your van. You're the cable company. I'm not going to let you raise my rates again. I'm calling American Satellite to get a direct TV system.
Presidential candidate.
Are you going to offer me over 125 digital quality channels for as little as $39.99 a month, including my local channels?
Ice Cream Man.
Yeah, like that's going to work. If I call American Satellite right now, I can get a four-room DirecTV system, including professional installation free. Can you beat that?
Pizza Man.
You already tried that. Well, that's it. I'm calling to get my DirecTV system.
Call 800-505-1546. That's 800-505-1546. For new customers only. Annual programming commitment required. Ask how you can get your first 6 months for only $29.99 a month, a $60 value. Offer ends July 17th. Call now. 800-505-1546.
A must-read, The Edison Gene, ADHD and the Gift of the Hunter Child by Tom Hartman, best-selling author of Attention Deficit Disorder, A Different Perception. Ed Halliwell, a nationally recognized expert on ADD, said this about The Edison Gene.
Tom Hartman demonstrates that ADHD can be associated with creativity, high achievement, and a most successful adaptive style.
The Edison Gene, now available in bookstores everywhere.
Hey, what does this word make you think of? Tchaikovsky.
Isn't it? So what's the word?
No, that is the word.
You lost it.
All right, who's Martha Graham?
She invented the graham cracker. Before her, there was only soda crackers.
Maybe they're not getting enough art. Kids who participate in the arts do better in school and in life. To learn more, visit AmericansForTheArts.org. Because all kids should get to appreciate Tchaikovsky's music and Martha Graham's dance. Art. Ask for more. A public service message brought to you by Americans for the Arts and the Ad Council.
Visit iowapeace.com for books on justice and peace. The Last Liberal Outlaw is Mike Palasek's new novel. Chuck Gregory with BlueEar.com had this to say. Palasek is at his best when writing about small-town America. It's a place he clearly loves, even as he pokes fun at its quirks and reveals the sickness that lies just below the surface. It's a place he knows, and he shares his knowledge in delightfully original ways, even as he cries out for change. We haven't had a writer like Palasek since Kurt Vonnegut was at his peak. Mike is an Iowa author, former federal prisoner for peace, small-town newspaper reporter, seminarian, and nominee for the U.S. House of Representatives in the Iowa Democratic Party 2000 election. For more information and more about Mike's other novels, visit iowapeace.com. The revolution won't be televised, but you can read about it. The Last Liberal Outlaw, A New American Revolution, is happening in the heartland.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back. 24 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman with you. We are talking with Tom Terez, the Grand Poobah. And how do you describe yourself with your website there?
Well, founder.
Founder, okay. That's
Grand Poobah sounds okay.
Yeah, okay. Chief Cook and Bottle Washer. Another Republican for Kerry.com, his website. Tom, before we go any farther, Richard, who was a guest on our last segment, I just have to make this announcement. He asked me to, and I think, you know, it's only fair to set the record straight here. Richard called back and said that the wheelchair guy that he got into a fight with ran into him first, and he said, we'll believe in the truth. We believe in the truth, so I'll pass that along, and we'll see if Richard believes in the truth and sends me my $10,000. So, anyhow, you didn't hear the segment, so that probably doesn't make any sense to you, but anyhow, back to another Republican for Kerry.com. Deborah in Santa Fe had a question for you, Tom, and let's drop her on the line here. Hey, Deborah, welcome to the program.
Hey, Tom, and I sure do want to see you get that $10,000, and I'm here in Santa Fe. I can help you out with that.
Okay.
But, Tom, we've had some email correspondence. I just have to plug your, and I hope you plug, the tutorial that you have about reframing and working with Lakoff's work on reframing, and I just think it's so very important what you're doing. It's just critical because it's something that the Democrats just don't get.
Right.
You know, 20 years ago, Gingrich revolution, the Republicans mastered framing the conversation, and that's what really we have to learn. So I'm just want to please give the website or how people can go and do your tutorial because it's really important.
Good one, thanks, Deborah. I'm familiar with that. I didn't realize that was your site, Tom. Give it a plug.
Yeah, well, the whole notion is, you know, in order to take back the White House, we need to take back the language.
Yeah.
That's a long-term proposition, but we need to do some fast work before November 2. So this tutorial, it's entirely free. It's on the web. It's at anotherrepublicanforkerry.com. This tutorial steps people screen to screen through a crash course on how the extreme conservatives have used their phrases and their messages and their spin to dominate the national dialogue, and how the rest of us can take back the language and reframe it so that it's a healthier dialogue, it's more balanced, it's more fair for everyone.
Yeah, I remember back during the Bush, in the 88 Bush campaign, a friend, back in the old days, used to be an NLP practitioner and NLP trainer. Richard Bandler wrote the introduction to one of my books. I'm very familiar with the word framing, you know, which came out of NLP, came out of the work of Stan Grof and mostly Milton Erickson, you know, and Lakoff, of course, now is doing a marvelous job of promulgating or propagating this stuff. And I remember a friend of mine who was an NLP trainer was hired by that campaign, and then I saw these the Willie Horton ads where they were using submodality shifts and anchoring to these guys have been engaging in psychological warfare since the 80s, and
right, and it's pretty subtle and insidious, and it can worm its way into our brain. A term so subtle as tax relief.
Right, which is the best example, which assumes that taxes are burdens. Taxes are, as Franklin Roosevelt said, taxes are the cost of admission to a civil society. And the bottom line is that these guys who keep saying you shouldn't pay taxes are saying we want a freeload on the backs of everybody else. We want a freeload on the backs of our children. We want civil society. We don't want to pay for it. That's what they're saying. Chuck in Los Alamos, we've only got a minute left here. Chuck, a quick point?
Yeah, really quick. Basically a Republican who's voting Democrat and has for a while. And what I'd really like to see, both Toms, is your opinion on what we need to do with respect to the debates.
Okay, Tom Terez, what do you say? You've got about 20 seconds here.
In terms of the debates, the literal debates, I take it,
yeah,
with the candidates?
Yeah.
I think they should be around small-town settings, small group forums, front porch kinds of settings. And let's let everyday people from all walks of life pose some hardball questions to these candidates.
Yeah, well, good luck. I agree with you, but good luck. Tom Terez, another Republican for Kerry, spelled FORKerry.com. Tom, thanks so much for being with us on the program today, and good luck in your efforts.
Thanks so much, Tom.
You're welcome. 29 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartman radio program, defending America from the conservative weapons of mass deception. For more more than 27 years, the Progressive magazine in these times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. Author and broadcast personality Studs Terkel calls In These Times his bi-weekly tonic. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. 1-800-827-0270.
Pop and not so pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Sarah Turner. The U.S. Justice Department announced yesterday that German computer memory manufacturing giant Infineon Technologies AG has agreed to plead guilty to international price fixing. The company conspired with other dynamic random access memory manufacturers to cheat Dell, Compact, Hewlett-Packard, and others. The company will be required to pay a $160 million fine, the third largest price fixing penalty in U.S. history.
United Food and Commercial Workers Union locals in California have begun shopping for allies in Colorado and Ohio. Contracts covering more than 60,000 supermarket employees in San Francisco, parts of Colorado, and Cincinnati all expired on September 11th. UFCW locals from those three areas have begun negotiations toward an alliance. According to representatives of the UFCW, the massive unification is an attempt to give support to one another if contract negotiations turn into a fight. The alliance comes nearly a year after the nation's longest ever grocery strike and lockout in Southern California.
Contrary to the current trend, J.P. Morgan announced this week that it will rehire 4,000 outsourced IT workers. Just 2 years ago, J.P. Morgan agreed to a $5 billion outsourcing deal with IBM, at the time one of the largest in the U.S. A company spokesperson said the employees are being rehired due to a recent merger with Bank One, which he said strengthened J.P. Morgan's technology infrastructure.
On Wednesday morning, after a night-long occupation of a Canadian paper plant that closed unexpectedly, disheartened workers returned to their homes. 400 workers were out of a job when the New Brunswick pulp and paper plant announced it was suddenly closing Tuesday. The plant, owned by Parsons and Whitmore of New York, said the closing was due to the high cost of wood and rising Canadian dollar. Union representatives at the mill are encouraging the workers to contact local officials who they blame for allowing the company to leave New Brunswick too easily.
Today's Dow Bob Report. Working women spend twice as much time as working men taking care of children and doing housework, according to a recent survey by the U.S. Labor Department. 78% of women and 85% of men hold jobs, but only 19% of men reported doing housework daily, compared to two-thirds of working women. Women also spent an hour and a half caring for a family member. The average man spent only 50 minutes. You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.com.
Bringing democracy to the United States of America, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back. 27 minutes before the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. Well, the guy in the wheelchair called back. The drama goes on. I'll let him say his own. And Richard, you're welcome to call in also and put your side of the story out. Back in our first hour. It's for those of you who've been listening, those of you who haven't. I'm not going to rehash the whole thing, but the story. And we'll see if. If I get my $10,000 here. 1-866-889-8894. Hold on to your dreams. November 2nd, dreaming of democracy here in the United States. 1-866-889-8894 telephone number, but it is time for our report from Washington, D.C. with Ellen Ratner of the Talk Radio News Service, the ever erstwhile Ellen. Hey, Ellen, I've got somebody on hold here. I'd like to take this call. Maybe you can comment on it
Go
as well.
For
is that all right with you? Okay,
Go
Jeremy in State College, Pennsylvania on the line. Hey, Jeremy, what's up?
Hi, Tom. I'm reading your Jefferson book right now, and
great.
I read the chapter about how no democracies attack each other.
Yeah.
And the question I have is, no one's really talking about, in terms of Iraq exit strategy,
right?
What's in our best interest? Because I have a friend who's over there right now, and he's of a camp that if we just pull everybody out right away, boom, there's going to be a huge civil war.
Yeah, and maybe even if we stay in, there's going to be a huge civil war. In my opinion,
right.
It's already started.
Right, but then the question also arises, if the Islamic extremists win the civil war and have a hardline Taliban-esque power there, how does that protect us? In
right.
terms of, you know, having a democracy or freedom of the people there.
Right.
You follow what I'm saying?
Yeah, but it's the Humpty Dumpty story. You know, Bush broke this thing, and I'm not sure there's enough crazy glue to put all the pieces back together again on the planet. Jeremy, good point. Let's see what Ellen has to say about that. Ellen, you're there in the belly of the beast in Washington, D.C. You talk to these politicians all the time. Is there some kind of consensus about what can be done, should be done?
There's absolutely none.
Yeah. See, I think
nobody has an exit plan.
Yeah, I think it's wise for Kerry not to lay out a specific strategy, frankly, because the conditions change from day to day, and to carve into stone any particular strategy would be nuts right now.
I don't disagree. Although, if I was president of the United States, the first thing I would do is to recognize that there's three separate groups in one geographic space.
Yeah.
And they need to have a big understanding of that and the tribal nature of the culture.
Yeah, and not only are they diverse, but they're also geographically diverse. So we could go back to the pre-World War I borders and simply, you know, create three states there and, you know, get around the Civil War without having a civil war. But if I was the president, I would have a strategy to get out of Iraq. But if I was a candidate who will not have power until January if I got elected, I think it would be very dangerous to put forward a strategy for Iraq.
Well, I can bet, though, during the debate, somebody might ask both of them.
Oh, sure.
Although, as I'm understanding, and Mr. Baker, who I think I told you is, James Baker is a wonderful negotiator, probably the best negotiator, whether you like his policies or not, that the State Department has ever had. And he is the one that's negotiating the debates, and apparently he's also negotiating topic areas.
Yeah. Yeah.
So they're trying to limit what can even be asked.
And you know, one of the big issues that they're fighting about is whether they stand or sit. And the reason being that, generally speaking, the tallest candidate running is the one who wins in most elections, not just presidential elections. And Bush wants to have them sit because he's 6 inches shorter than Kerry, or 5 inches shorter than Kerry. He's 5'11", Kerry's 6'4". And Kerry would rather have them stand so everybody can see that he's taller.
Well, and this is certainly with the vice presidential debate, not because of height, but because of stamina.
Yeah. Oh, that's interesting. Yeah. Well, there you can say, okay, we're going to cut, you know, old Dick, he's got a pacemaker, we'll cut him a little slack.
The last vice presidential debate, they sat. But Edwards' camp really wants them to stand.
Yeah.
Because he's used to doing his points as a trial lawyer.
Yeah, which is standing. That's a good point. That's a good point. Anyway,
okay.
So what's happening in Washington?
Some very interesting things going on. I thought because today was Rosh Hashanah that there was not going to be much happening. And there's not much, but what is pretty interesting. First of all, the Democratic National Committee has a new ad coming out, and it will be on their website sort of as we speak. It will be in 11 states. They're saying that basically Bush lied when he stood up in front of the National Guard, and that he said that things were getting better in Iraq. Well, either he didn't read his new report that's out on some of the AP wires, or he absolutely lied. And this is a series of ads, they say, that they're going to have. And he said the president can't admit when he's wrong or when he made a mistake, and you can't fix a mistake if you can't admit you made a mistake. And so they're now going to have a bunch of ads going after policy favors, failures. Sorry.
Yeah.
Two other interesting things. This is fascinating. And the AFL-CIO this morning announced that at a press conference that they have a fast fax And it's called workingamerica.org. And in that, you can go to a job tracker.
Mm-hmm.
And what the job tracker tracks, Tom, is 200,000 businesses and their subsidiaries and how they have shipped jobs overseas. It also, they have all the companies and where they did ship them, and they've linked it to CEO pay. You can actually just put in your name of a company, or you can put in your zip code, and it will tell you what jobs are going where.
Amazing.
And they also have a map with the 48 states that have lost the most manufacturing jobs. There's only two states, actually 50 states, not 48, that have gained jobs. One is Nevada, and the other is Alaska, with a big 900 jobs.
Yeah. WorkingAmerica.org.
Yep.
Okay.
And so that's a pretty interesting one.
Yeah.
Also, the Congressional Black Caucus under Donald Payne had a rally today called Join the Divest Sudan Drive, Not in My Name, and Not with My Money. And talk show host Joe Madison and Walter Fauntleroy, who used to be the representative for Washington, D.C., are sponsoring it. And essentially, they have now listed over $91 billion invested over 100 of Americans' most prominent public pension funds in the Sudan, and they are putting in money. Teachers, firefighters, police officers, everybody is going to be is named in this. And it's, you know, everybody from the Tampa firefighters to the Boston retirement system has invested, and it lists the amount of money that they have put in companies that are in the Sudan.
That are doing business with the oil industry and with the Arab government that is committing genocide on the non-Arab neighbors to the south. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, remarkable. That's good. This is the kind of, you know, shareholder activism that I think is a wonderful thing. I also think it's so important that people realize that there are limits to this, that if we ever get to start thinking that you can vote with your dollars, you know, the end of that logic is the person with the most dollars has the most votes. It's not democracy. It's stuff we need to do. We absolutely need to do it. But it doesn't solve the problem of corporate influence in Washington, D.C.
One little last one, speaking of corporate interests, that I knew you would just love to hear about. Hal Burton had to admit what they're lobbying, how much they're spending lobbying, and it's about the same as other years if you just look at what Hal Burton does, which is about, for the first half of the year, $250,000 in lobbying. However, they have a subsidiary, and it's called their government operations subsidiary, and they have spent an additional half year, $520,000 lobbying Congress.
Gee.
through a lobbying firm, which is also a law firm, Covington & Burling.
What a surprise. I'm shocked! Gambling here in Casablanca. I'm shocked.
I knew you'd be surprised.
Yeah, that's great. Ellen, thanks so much for the report. I'm assuming that kind of brings us up to date on what's going on.
It's slow going this week, and
yeah.
It'll be even slower going probably during the campaign, but when Congress is out. But those are the highlights.
Okay, so is it Shinatov?
Yes, it
yeah.
is.
Okay, Happy New Year.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Lahitros. Talk to you later. It's the Tom Hartman radio program, 18 minutes before the hour. And our quote for the day, by the way, from Aristotle. Yesterday we had one from Aristotle, which I thought was pretty good. Let's go back to Aristotle, the student of Plato, who is the student of Socrates, who, in my opinion, helped bring down the Athenian democracy. But, pushed the wrong button there. But other folks think not. In any case, Aristotle, our quote for the day, we can do noble acts without ruling earth and sea. We don't need to be an empire. We can be a republic. We can be a constitutionally limited democratic republic. We don't need to be an empire. I think it's pretty straightforward. John Kerry on the issues. Here's where I have a problem with where the Democrats are going and where I think that all of us need to be leaning on these guys. We'll be talking about this more from Grand Rapids tomorrow with some folks who are representatives of organized labor. But this concerns me, frankly. And I don't, you know, I one of these days I'm going to get some Democrat on here and I'm going to ask them, you know, does this stuff come out of the DLC, which the Democratic Leadership Council, which is the group that Bill Clinton helped create back in 92, I believe it was, to basically bring corporations and corporate power into government, into the Democratic Party, rather. Or is this just like some sort of wishy-washy compromise position? But here's my problem with where the Democrats stand on this stuff. This is a quote about John Kerry, from John Kerry. John Kerry on Free Trade said, while meeting Wednesday morning with 30 workers at a steel plant in This is from the New York Times. Okay. While meeting Wednesday morning with about 30 workers at a steel plant, that's about Kerry, in Cleveland, Kerry said he would review all trade agreements in his first 4 months in office. Well, I think that's wonderful. I think we ought to throw most of them out the window. China, most favored nation status for trade purposes, when it's a dictator, a brutal dictator. Come on. And you know, level the playing field at World Trade. WTO is nothing more than handing the sovereign rights of sovereign nations over to multinational corporations. That really is the beginning and end of the whole thing. You can frame it in some sort of weird one-world order conspiracy theory like Pat Buchanan does, or you can frame it in the context of the rise of neo-feudalism like I do in Unequal Protection, A Rise of Corporate Power and the Theft of Human Rights, my book, Corporate Dominance. Or you can frame it as, free trade, the way Republicans do. However you frame it, it's the handing over the sovereignty of the United States to multinational corporations, and it's wrong. So anyhow, Kerry says he's going to review all the trade agreements in his first 4 months in office. It goes on to say he said he would not sign the Central American Free Trade Agreement or the Free Trade of the Americas Agreement without protections for labor and environmental standards. Now, here's my problem with this. First of all, these are agreements that the Republicans and many of the conservative Democrats, this is more a conservative versus liberal issue than it is a Republican versus Democratic issue, because there are conservative Republicans who are in favor of these trade deals. Bill Clinton, for example. And in my opinion, they are not only wrong, they are selling us down the river. I mean, there's just no other way to say it. And let's put some lipstick on these things. Let's gussy them up. It just, you know, it makes no sense at all to say, well, these free trade agreements, we don't like them because you've got people working for 50 cents an hour who are not allowed to have unions and they are in prison in China, or, you know, things to that effect, which is true, okay, or in Burma. I mean, the entire nation is a prison. Well, that's not to say China's not. Okay. But it goes beyond that, in my opinion. It goes way beyond that. And this is the mistake that I think that the Democrats are making. The mistake they're making is they're saying, well, we can have these free trade agreements if there are protections for labor and the environment. What the heck does that mean? See, the old, it's the devil's in the details. By the way, Ira, if you could turn off the monitor in the other room there, turn it down a little bit. I'm hearing an echo in my headphones. It's making me crazy. Here's the problem with this. If you've got union jobs across the United States that are paying anywhere from, you know, $10, $15 up to $20, $25, $30 an hour, depending on the job, depending on how tough it is, all those sorts of things. But good paying jobs with pensions and health benefits and all this sort of stuff. And so you say, okay, free trade, we're going to have that. We're going to want that. But the terms are that the people in the other countries have to be able to unionize. So the people in Burma get together. Well, that's an extreme example because it ain't never going to happen in Burma. Let's say Malaysia or Indonesia, countries that are not absolute dictatorships. They're only sort of moderate dictatorships, you know, that have the patina of democracy. And they allow labor protections. They allow unionization. And so the wages start to go up from 50 cents an hour to, say, $2 an hour. That's a 400% increase in wages for the people in Malaysia. And I'm just using for example numbers, but you get the point. How can we compete? How can American workers compete at $15, $20 an hour with organized labor in Malaysia that's making $2 an hour, or even $3 or $4 or $5 an hour. They can't. And this is where the thing just, in my mind, just breaks down. And, oh, they've got to have environmental standards. China, increasingly, it's becoming obvious, there's these huge pockets of cancer popping up all over the country. China has turned into the industrial waste dump of the world. It's looking like parts of the United States did in the 1890s and the early 1900s, the early industrialization of America, you know, leading to things like rivers catching on fire. Only it's far worse now in China, probably, than it's ever been anywhere. Because the people have no rights, no powers to stand up and say, hey, wait a minute, our kids are getting cancer. So we're going to say, okay, you got to clean up the environment. So they say, okay, fine. You know, so that's going to raise our labor costs from $2 an hour to $2.50 an hour when you build the cost of environmental protection. You still can't compete with that. See, in my opinion, what we need to do is we need to say manufacturing has to do with national security. We need to have independence in the United States. If we need to come back to the situation where our clothing is made here, where our missiles are made here, where our electronics are made here, it's just the best thing for the United States, and you do that with tariffs.
Do you want to find out what the invasion of Iraq was really about? Read the new illustrated book, We the People, A Call to Take Back America by Tom Hartman. Once you've read We the People, you'll understand why conservatives are trying to bankrupt government and how perpetual war is used as a political strategy in the United States. You'll learn how our votes are in danger and what we must do about it. You'll discover why the Alien and Sedition Acts of 1798 matter today. Populist watchdog and national radio commentator Jim Hightower had this to say about We the People.
Not only does this book tell you what's really going on, but it even draws you a picture of it. Read, learn, and act.
We the People, A Call to Take Back America by Tom Hartman. A compelling story of how a government by and for the people has been replaced by corporate domination. Fully illustrated by Neil Cohn, We the People issues a call to action in a most entertaining way. Available in bookstores everywhere.
Are George Bush's policies getting you down? Have you had enough of Bush's messianic militarism? Does John Ashcroft's assault on the Bill of Rights scare you? Do you believe that Dick Cheney had his conscience surgically removed 3 decades ago? Are you angry at the Iraq fiasco that was the brainchild of Deputy Secretary of Defense Paul out of his Wolfowitz? Well, then subscribe to the Progressive magazine. You'll get the insights of Barbara Ehrenreich, the inspiration of Howard Zinn, and the mirth of Molly Ivins, Will Durst, and Kate Clinton. They'll help you survive this dark age. And check this out. You can subscribe today for only $12 for 12 monthly issues. Simply get on the web and go to www.progressive.org or call 1-800-827-0555 and mention offer radio. That's 1-800-827-0555 and mention the radio offer from the Tom Hartman program. That's the Progressive. It's your antidote to reactionary policies. On September 17th, I'll be broadcasting live on WTKG AM 1230 in Grand Rapids at the Celebration Cinema, noon to 3 p.m. at the corner of Knapp and East Beltline. Drop by early at 11 a.m. in the Wave Room for a get-together, then listen to the show. At 4 p.m. after the show, I'll be at Schuller Bookstore on 28th Street for a book signing. For more information, call 616-776-5541. That's 616-776-5541.
Can you imagine a world in which all kids live healthy, safe, productive, and prosperous lives? Well, that world is within our grasp, and there's a way to reach it. It's called Economics. And to learn more, just pull up DennisWeaverNow.com and learn how to get a free report of our Economics educational program and how together we can build a world of prosperity without pollution. DennisWeaverNow.com. DennisWeaverNow.com. DennisWeaverNow.com.
A long-term study of Yellowstone National Park shows that wildfires are good for fish and other aquatic life. I'm Steve Pomplin for Earthwatch Radio. One of the arguments against letting wildfires burn is that they destroy forested slopes and leave the land open to erosion. But a new book about the 1988 fires in Yellowstone National Park shows that even erosion sometimes has its place in nature. Linda Wallace is a wildfire expert at the University of Oklahoma and the editor of After the the Fires, a collection of reports on Yellowstone's recovery from the 1988 event. She says she was surprised by one study's finding that erosion is vital to aquatic life in the park's rivers and streams.
The erosion processes in Yellowstone are very, very important, and one of the things that the geological history has shown us is that we have these massive amounts of erosion occurring off and on. It turns out that even for the aquatic systems, that these erosion processes are very, very critical because they set up new spawning beds in streams and creeks, and that actually helps fish populations in the years following a fire.
Wallace says the influx of soil and ash is initially tough on fish, killing many of them.
During an erosion event, the creeks and streams, of course, get extremely muddy and fishing is impossible. Fish will die with their gills clogged. Those fish that manage to survive, though, will find the next year wonderful spawning area, and then their populations will actually respond positively.
These periodic erosion events also deliver minerals and other vital nutrients into the streams, an essential process in a nutrient-poor landscape. Wallace says these findings add support for the view that wildfires are an important part of many ecosystems, even some that are underwater. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Sea Grant Program at the University of Wisconsin.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
It's coming through a hole in the air from those nads in Tiananmen Square.
And welcome back, bringing democracy back to the United States of America. Tom Hartman here with you. You know, in the first part of this hour, our guest was Tom Terez, who was another Republican for Kerry.com website. And I just want to be on the record as saying that I want to absolutely encourage everybody who is listening to this program, whether you are a conservative or liberal, Republican, Democrat, independent, whatever you may be, green, progressive, whatever, even the Nader backers who are listening, to start participating with either the Republican or the Democratic Party, whichever one you feel more comfortable with. Because unless people like us begin to infiltrate one of these two major parties, because the reality is the way the Constitution was written, whether we like it or not, we have a two-party system here in the United States, unlike most of the rest of the world. And until we infiltrate and take over one of these two parties, or both of them, so that they become responsive once again, or maybe some would argue they never were. Okay, that's another argument. But anyhow, until they become responsive to we the people are in big trouble. So let me strongly encourage that you get involved. And that's not to say don't get involved with the Greens, for example, or with the Reform Party or the Libertarians or whatever you're into. Go for it. Participate with the third parties, absolutely, particularly on the local level, and infiltrate one of the two major parties, because that's where the power is. We need to get into the belly of the beast. Our Bush lie for the day, President Bush, September 14th, was it 2 days ago, before I'll allow drug reimportation to happen, he said, I'm going to make sure that you're safe. This is Bush as daddy, right? Because all you need to do is get a batch of drugs manufactured elsewhere that sounds like they're legitimate and get sick. Well, you mean like Lipitor that's manufactured in Ireland and sold at a higher price here in the United States than in Canada? I mean, you know, come on. Where are all the dead Canadians? Knight Ritter, although they've been warning Americans about the dangers of prescription drugs from Canada for nearly a year, the U.S. Food and Drug Administration cannot name a single American who's been injured or killed by drugs bought from licensed Canadian pharmacies. Tom McGinnis, President Bush's FDA Director of Pharmacy Affairs, I can't think of a thing off the top of my head where somebody died or somebody got put in a hospital because of these medications. I just don't know if there's anything like that. Well, no, there isn't. Once again, George W. lying to us, trying to scare people into putting more profits in the hands of huge corporations. His base. Tom Hartman with you on the True People's Radio.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information. Now, it's time for This Billionaire Moment.
When it came time to bilk California out of billions in energy costs, Kenneth Lay said, "Send me." When George Bush's campaign needed hundreds of thousands of bundled dollars, Kenneth Lay said, "Send me." When Dick Cheney needed help crafting energy policy that was friendlier to corporations, Kenneth Lay said, "Send me." And when someone had to keep small Enron investors calm so the big guys could bail out before the stock collapsed, Kenneth Lay said, "Send me." He pioneered new ways to create profits, and now he has to wear an orange jumpsuit and languish in a cell without room service. We can only hope that there's a squash court at that minimum security prison. I'm Xenophobe for This Billionaire Moment.
This Billionaire Moment is brought to you by BillionairesForBush.com.
Here come the billionaires!
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Sarah Turner. The U.S. Justice Department announced yesterday that German computer memory manufacturing giant Infineon Technologies AG has agreed to plead guilty to international price fixing. The company conspired with other dynamic random access memory manufacturers to cheat Dell, Compaq, Hewlett-Packard, and others. The company will be required to pay a $160 million fine, the third largest price fixing penalty in U.S. history.
United Food and Commercial Workers Union locals in California have begun shopping for allies in Colorado and Ohio. Contracts covering more than 60,000 supermarket employees in San Francisco, parts of Colorado, and Cincinnati all expired on September 11th. UFCW locals from those three areas have begun negotiations toward an alliance. According to representatives of the UFCW, the massive unification is an attempt to give support to one another if contract negotiations turn into a fight. The alliance comes nearly a year after the nation's longest ever grocery strike and lockout in Southern California.
Contrary to the current trend, J.P. Morgan announced this week that it will rehire 4,000 outsourced IT workers. Just 2 years ago, J.P. Morgan agreed to a $5 billion outsourcing deal with IBM, at the time one of the largest in the U.S. A company spokesperson said the employees are being rehired due to a recent merger with Bank One, which he said strengthened J.P. Morgan's technology infrastructure.
On Wednesday morning, after a night-long occupation of a Canadian paper plant that closed unexpectedly, disheartened workers returned to their homes. 400 workers were out of a job when the New Brunswick pulp and paper plant announced it was suddenly closing Tuesday. The plant, owned by Parsons and Whitmore of New York, said the closing was due to the high cost of wood and rising Canadian dollar. Union representatives at the mill are encouraging the workers to contact local officials who they blame for allowing the company to leave New Brunswick too easily.
Today's Dow Bob Report. Working women spend twice as much time as working men taking care of children and doing housework, according to a recent survey by the U.S. Labor Department. 78% of women and 85% of men hold jobs, but only 19% of men reported doing housework daily, compared to two-thirds of working women. Women also spent an hour and a half caring for a family member. The average man spent only 50 minutes. You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
No, not the yacht.
Darling, wake up. You're having a nightmare.
Oh, it was terrible. Oh. I dreamed we lost our billions, and we were middle class.
There, there.
We were both working, and we could barely pay our bills. The children had to go to public schools. Oh. We had something called an HMO.
Oh, you poor thing.
It seems so real. We couldn't even afford my Botox.
Oh, sweetheart, go back to sleep. I'll write another campaign check tomorrow.
President George W. Bush, keeping alive the American dream. For some of us.
Easily paid for by BillionairesForBush.com.
Did you take full and proper notice of the political coming out of George W.'s twin daughters? Jenna and Barbara, the 22-year-old twins, have long been kept away from the political glare, but they're now adults who have just graduated from college, and both have been brought into the limelight by the Bush political campaign. Their first outing was for a photo spread and puff piece that ran in Vogue, the fashion magazine. Indeed, they looked splendiferous, beautifully made up and swathed in glamorous designer gowns, one by Oscar de la Renta and the other by Calvin Klein. No telling how many silkworms toiled to make this photo spread possible. But, tacky me, I couldn't help thinking as I viewed the photos, why aren't they in fatigues and Kevlar vests like other women and men their age? Jenna and Barbara announced that they would be joining their daddy's election campaign, but I had to ask myself, why aren't they joining their daddy's war? After all, he says that his war in Iraq is absolutely essential to our national security, and he insists that his policies over there are absolutely worth the troops who have been killed, worth the horrible mutilations of thousands of other soldiers, worth the horrific beheadings, worth the untold illnesses and poisonings being contracted by the men and women he has sent there, and worth the illegal conscription of tens of thousands of Americans forced to stay in this disastrous war beyond their legitimate tour of duty. So, if Daddy's war is absolutely worth the sacrifice of America's workaday families, why is it not worth the enlistment of his military-age family? This is Jim Hightower saying, maybe it's genetic. After all, George himself was a ferocious war hawk who used family connections to keep himself 8,000 miles from Vietnam. And now that he's president, he can start his own war that leaves his loved ones safely swathed in silk, while our families see our loved ones come home in shrouds.
My name is James, and I want to tell you how a friend of mine changed my life. After my wife passed away, I found myself spending more and more time alone. I kept up with the daily business of living, but didn't get out as much. Didn't see friends as much. That's when I met a new friend, Sassy. Let me tell you about her. First of all, she can perform miracles. She's only a year old, weighs only 9 pounds, but she can jump up 5 times her own height. But the most impressive miracle is what a difference she's made in my life. She's my cat. I named her Sassy because I had a cat named Sassy when I was a little boy. I shared everything with that cat. What I've realized is that it doesn't matter if you're 8 or 80. We all need friends. I found my best friend, Sassy, at the ASPCA.
This is Richard Thompson, a member of the board of directors of the ASPCA, encouraging you to visit your local animal shelter and adopt a cat.
Covers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you. 7 minutes past the hour. Ownership Society or Snake Oil? Great piece by Ann Applebaum in the Washington Post. Want to share some of the details of that with you. I assume that you saw where Kofi Annan yesterday, the Secretary General of the United Nations, said that the invasion of Iraq by George W. was illegal. First time he's ever actually used the word illegal. We have committed, according to the head of the UN, an international crime. And as a consequence of going in and kicking over the pottery here, now it's all broken, we have an increasing mess. Frankly, I think the Civil War has already begun. Two Americans and a Brit were just kidnapped, according to the New York Times Online, just kidnapped in Iraq, where they actually, you know, went in and got them. I mean, this situation is so far out of control. We 6 cities now are completely under the control of insurgents, as well as 90% of the country of Afghanistan. We have lost the landmass. Of course, Kabul, the largest city we control, and one other city, I forget the name of it, in Afghanistan we control. But that's it. Oh,
but we're having elections in Iran or in Afghanistan, said George Bush at the Republican National Convention. I heard him. He says, we've got a record number, over 10 million people who are registered to vote. Isn't that wonderful? Well, yes, because the warlords are forcing people to sign up because they want them to vote for them. Afghanistan is the largest narco-terrorist state in the world right now. They just exported the largest crop of opium poppies, the biggest bunch of heroin in the history of the world. Whose watch did this happen on? Whose watch did 9/11 happen on? Who got the memo that said bin Laden determined to strike in the United States and then went on vacation? Come on, you know. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Billy in Santa Cruz, California on the line. Hey, Billy, welcome to the program. What's up?
Hey, you just got me all excited about so many different things, so I thought I'd comment.
Okay, great.
Let's start with the ownership society.
Yeah.
So you see, when you own the society, you don't just have the assets, you have the debts. Suckers.
Yeah. Yeah, well, see, that's... There you go. He's already given us the ownership society. We own the debt. Yes.
Yeah, now you get to own the debt. And by the way, I mean that. In other words, literally, for example, when the pension crisis happens, we, each one of us, will end up paying that in many ways.
And the banking crisis like we did last time.
Exactly.
And
you have that. Oh, by the way, the reason that the poppy thing and the heroin thing is so good, I mean, you know, you chalk it up to American efficiency. Nobody can do it like we can do it.
Well, see, nobody can do it like the Northern Alliance.
Yeah, I
was inclined to say nobody can do it like the CIA can do it because it was
Air
really...
America.
Well, it was, yeah, and not the network, yeah. The airline that Ollie North and friends seem to have been involved with, smuggling drugs out of Nicaragua in exchange for smuggling into the United States, cocaine specifically, in exchange for weapons going down there.
Exactly.
You know, dirty stuff.
I wanted to talk about impaired voters.
Yes, sir.
We were talking about it around here, about Alzheimer's voters and the like, and I was thinking about that. One person mentioned that her mother wants to vote for Roosevelt still. And the fact is, if her mother wants to vote for Roosevelt, she's certainly not a Bush voter, you know.
Well, you know what the problem is, Billy, is there's Roosevelt's, you know, Roosevelt's principles have been forgotten.
Oh, yeah.
They've been forgotten. I mean, I see that as 90% of what I'm trying to do with this show is simply remind people of what Franklin Roosevelt was talking about, and of what Thomas Jefferson was talking about the historic worldview of what should be the Democratic Party that has been hijacked by these, you know, what Al Franken calls himself a DLC Democrat, by the DLC Democrats, you know, the guys who think that it's a good thing for corporations to own a political party.
Yeah, awful. Now, the impairment, though, I think has to be enlarged, our concept, so that, for example, I mean, we know what the interest group of Alzheimer's is. They want to vote against George Bush because of the stem cell thing. But there's other kinds of people who maybe are too impaired to vote. I would suggest, for example, that if you're Bible-addled, if you think the Earth is only 6,000 years old, if you think that Iraqis attacked us on 9/11, you shouldn't be allowed to vote. You are impaired.
Well,
I want to bring back
hang on just
the,
a second. With the former description, you described George W. Bush, and with the latter, you described Dick Cheney.
Yes, didn't I? And so those people actually, so I'm suggesting that it's time to have a poll test again. Bring back something that was bad in the beginning, but has a place today.
What is the square root of 3?
No, that's not important. That doesn't matter. How about, how old is the age of the Earth? Did Iraqis attack us on 9/11? Things that really matter.
Yeah.
You know, should superstition or science be allowed to rule a secular society? You know, those kinds of questions.
Yeah, yeah. Hey, dream on, my friend.
Thanks, buddy.
Dream on. Okay. Thanks, Billy. Thanks for the call. Good to hear from you. 1-866-889-8894 is our telephone number, by the way, if you'd like to call and be on the program today. If you have thoughts about what's up, what we're talking about, or any other topic for that matter. Tomorrow we'll be broadcasting live from Grand Rapids, from our affiliate in Grand Rapids, Michigan, WTKG. And it should be an interesting program. And so this ownership society thing, I'd like to get into this a little bit, because I think Ann Applebaum really laid this out well in the Washington Post yesterday, and she talks about going to Medicare.gov, right? There's these commercials running on TV that say, are you confused about Medicare? They don't even say that. They just sort of imply that. They say, you know, it's still the same old Medicare.
They're saying this at the same time that the cons are running around going, we got to cut back on Medicare. We got to cut back on Social Security. We got to turn this stuff over to corporations. Let's have an ownership society where you get to pay for your own retirement and you get to pay for your own health care out of your own pocket. Yes. Well, you know, in theory, it sounds like a good idea, doesn't it? I mean, shouldn't we be responsible for ourselves? Let's extend it. You get to pay for your own police services. Go out and hire a cop. You can have 30 cops if you're really rich. You can have one if you're not very rich. You might have to share one with six or eight neighbors if you're not, if you're sort of middle class or below. Maybe you know, you might have to get together 200-300 people if you don't have a lot of money to hire a cop. Let's go to the Ownership Society for our fire department. How about roads? Why don't you own your own roads? You could own, I probably have enough money. I could own maybe 60 feet of the road out here. The roads are pretty expensive. This is where the cons in their hijacking of the use of language have succeeded so well in implanting in people the belief in a reality that just frankly, practically, cleanly, clearly does not work. It does not work. We collectively agreed we would like to have fire departments. We all just kind of got together, and it wasn't always that way. Here's one of the arguments that comes. Well, health care for everybody isn't in the Constitution. Neither are fire departments.
Well, Social Security isn't in the Constitution. I don't think the founders thought about that.
Well, neither are police departments.
Well, it talks about, life and liberty, life, protect life. That's why you have police and fire departments.
Well, okay. Doesn't health care have something to do with life? Life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness? Couldn't Social Security have something to do with that? See, here's the problem. This is the argument that nobody's really talking about. And that is, everybody agrees in America, by and large. There are some extreme right-wing cranks out there who are still living in utopian fantasy land. Doug Feith, Paul Wolfowitz, these guys who are using Iraq as their little experimental laboratory where they're, throw the country completely open to free trade, allow the corporations to run everything, privatize everything, ban trade unions. Yes, they banned trade unions. It's illegal to form a union in Iraq. It is not illegal, however, for a corporation to go into Iraq, buy a business, buy property, buy anything it wants, and take 100% of the profits out of the country and not reinvest them. In other words, Iraq can be strip mined for its resources, for its labor. This is these guys' vision for America. This is what they would like us to have here. And increasingly, it's what we have as a result of Reaganomics over these last two decades, 24 years. We have seen the evisceration, the wiping out of the middle class. So anyhow, we all agree, Republicans and Democrats and Greens and Reform Party members and whatever, we all pretty much agree on a certain amount of, for lack of a better word, socialism. I know it's a dirty word, and unfortunately I don't have a better word. If you do, give me a call at 866-889-8894 and enlighten me. But we all agree that we want a certain amount of socialism. We want a certain amount of stuff that we socially, collectively share. We want roads. And we all are collectively willing to pay for them with our tax dollars. And we agree that when somebody comes along and says, Well, I don't want to pay taxes for our roads, but I do want to ride on the roads. That they're freeloaders. And especially if they say, well, I don't want to pay taxes, but I don't mind if the government borrows billions of dollars and lets my children pay those taxes. I just want to use the roads. Then they're even worse than freeloaders. They're George W. Bush Republicans. Anyhow, we all agree that we want roads. We all agree that we want police departments. We all agree we want fire departments. Now we start getting into the debate. Do we all agree that we want to have fresh air and clean water? See, here's the problem. If you ask individual American citizens, you will get 90% or more saying, yeah. And we are willing to pay tax dollars to have the federal government enforce standards that will force corporations or anybody to behave in a way that doesn't foul our water and our air and cause us to die of cancer and other diseases. But the politicians are listening to the corporations more than they are to you and me, because that's where the money is. And therein lies the rub. And that's just the beginning. You know, do we want the EPA? Do we want Occupational Health and Safety Administration? Do we want the Food and Drug Administration? Do we want the U.S. Department of Agriculture making sure that our food is safe? Do we want Social Security? Do we want Medicare? Do we want medical insurance for everybody? Where do we stop and where do we begin? These are legitimate questions, I think. 20 minutes past the hour.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Waitsfield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Now, it's time for This Billionaire Moment.
When human rights groups discover that our third world sweatshops employ a lot of child labor, they're always horrified. These children should be in school, they stridently insist. But why would these kids be better off sitting at a desk learning about social studies than working on our assembly lines? Schools are supposed to prepare you for the future. In most of the places we do business, the only future these moppets have is on an assembly line. What better way for them to prepare than in our sweatshop apprentice program? The kids get paid a special introductory wage while they learn all the skills they'll need for the rest of their short, miserable lives. And those little hands can do some really intricate stitching, believe me. This has been Xenophobe for This Billionaire Moment.
This Billionaire Moment is brought to you by BillionairesForBush.com.
Here come the billionaires!
For more than 27 years, the Progressive magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. Author and broadcast personality Studs Terkel calls In These Times his bi-weekly tonic. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. 1-800-827-0270.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. According to the Work Zone Safety Clearinghouse, work zone-related fatalities dropped substantially last year. In 2003, there were 1,028 work zone deaths nationwide as compared to 2002, when there was 1,186. Texas holds the record for most deaths over the last 2 years with a combined total of 358. Georgia is the most improved, going from 118 fatalities in 2002 and dropping to 24 in 2003.
Are George Bush's policies getting you down? Have you had enough of Bush's messianic militarism? Does John Ashcroft's assault on the Bill of Rights scare you?
Do you believe that Dick Cheney had his conscience surgically removed 3 decades ago? Are you angry at the Iraq fiasco that was the brainchild of Deputy Secretary of Defense Paul out of his Wolfowitz? Well, then subscribe to the Progressive Magazine. You'll get the insights of Barbara Ehrenreich, the inspiration of Howard Zinn, and the mirth of Molly Ivins, Will Durst, and Kate Clinton. They'll help you survive this dark age. And check this out. You can subscribe today for only $12 for 12 monthly issues. Simply get on the web and go to www.progressive.org or call 1-800-827-0555 and mention offer radio. That's 1-800-827-0555 and mention the radio offer from the Tom Hartman Program. That's the Progressive. It's your antidote to reactionary policies.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
I get up every morning and ignore the global warming. Head out to the Oval Office, start my day. I keep my donors all protected so I can be re-elected. Give them access just as long as they pay.
And welcome back.
And to the corporate crooks who keep cooking up the books. We make sure we look the other way.
Ah, the Bush song.
The laws are theirs to break, long as I still get my take. My war chest keeps on growing each day. And I've been taking care of business.
Yes, indeed, the Bush administration taking care of business. Do we want a socialist Star Wars program? Do we want it to collectively agree to spend trillions of dollars on something that doesn't seem to make any sense other than that it pays off big donors to the Reagan campaign? And of course, Don Rumsfeld was a lobbyist for it before becoming defense secretary. At what point do we start? At what point do we stop? And why is it that the will of the American people, who consistently, in huge majorities, ever since Harry Truman, in huge majorities, we're talking 70, 80, 90% say, yes, we should have national health care. Yes, we should have a social security system that actually works. Yes, we should have a minimum wage on which people can actually live. Yes, we should have laws that allow people to unionize. Why is it that the will of the people is not being enacted? And why is it that we are listening to a small slice of very rich right-wing talk show hosts and very rich conservative Republican politicians and very rich corporations who own the airwaves and who are making the points over and over and over again that, oh, you wouldn't want that. That's socialism. Oh, you wouldn't. You know, the nanny state, it's a terrible thing. When we collectively get together and say, you know, we do want these things and we're willing to pay for them. We realize taxes are the price of a civil society, and we are proud to pay our taxes if we get the society that we are asking for. It works in many other countries. Why can't it work here? After all, we came up with the idea in the first place. 1-866-889-8894. Telephone number, Lois in Berkeley, California on the line. Hey, Lois, what's up?
Yeah, I wanted to say one thing you said, another word besides socialist. I call myself a pluralist. I think some things government does better. For instance, mail delivery.
Yeah.
And other things people can, you know, sell privately or whatever.
Well, see, you know, and mail is an interesting one because people love to pick on the post office. And the reason why mail delivery, it works so much better when it's run by the government and why it is in virtually every country in the world, you know, and has been ever since Ben Franklin, is, and even before that, is because there are many areas of a country where it is not profitable to deliver mail. And it's the same reason why Franklin Roosevelt created the REA, the Rural Electrification Administration, because the electrification, the you know, Westinghouse was a big one, General Electric, the big electric companies would not provide electricity to people in rural areas because it wasn't profitable.
Even. But I have a question to ask you.
Okay, go for it.
When you were saying that in Iraq they don't allow unions.
That's right.
Can I get a reference for that? Because when I say stuff to people, they say, where did you get that? Where did you learn that?
Naomi Klein, it's all over the place, but Naomi Klein wrote a marvelous piece, which is a cover story in the current issue of Harper's, I believe,
if not Harper's, then The Nation. But I'm quite sure it's Harper's, the September issue, in which she lays out the whole neocon.
And the other question I wanted to ask is, I've heard something about those faith-based initiatives. I heard only Christians and only fundamentalist Christians can get service for that. And I tried to look it up on the web, and I couldn't find anything about it except how you can apply it.
No, it's not true. Reverend Moon and his organizations have got a lot of money under the faith-based initiatives.
Yeah, I know that, but I mean the new faith-based initiative things.
Yeah,
I heard that there was no faith except Christians.
No, well, in functional reality, that's been in large case. You know, the Wiccans and the pagans and even Jews and Muslims are not getting much. You know, it's mostly the Christians and the Moonies. But it's not written into the law that way. It's just, you know, it's being administered that way because it's an arm
of the Bush administration.
You're welcome, Lois. Thanks for the call. Good to hear from you. 29 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman with you. Scott, stick on the line. We'll pick up your call on the other side of this break. Discussing solutions, real solutions, what really might work here in the United States and not the phony false promises, the utopian, bizarre, right-wing thinking of the right. Right here on the Tom Hartman Program, Real Solutions. Stick around. For more than 27 years, the progressive magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. Author and broadcast personality Studs Terkel calls In These Times his bi-weekly tonic. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. 1-800-827-0270.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Sarah Turner. The U.S. Justice Department announced yesterday that German computer memory manufacturing giant Infineon Technologies AG has agreed to plead guilty to international price fixing. The company conspired with other dynamic random access memory manufacturers to cheat Dell, Compaq, Hewlett-Packard, and others. The company will be required to pay a $160 million fine, the third largest price fixing penalty in U.S. history.
United Food and Commercial Workers Union locals in California have begun shopping for allies in Colorado and Ohio. Contracts covering more than 60,000 supermarket employees in San Francisco, parts of Colorado, and Cincinnati all expired on September 11th. UFCW locals from those three areas have begun negotiations toward an alliance. According to representatives of the UFCW, the massive unification is an attempt to give support to one another if contract negotiations turn into a fight. The alliance comes nearly a year after the nation's longest ever grocery strike and lockout in Southern California.
Contrary to the current trend, J.P. Morgan announced this week that it will rehire 4,000 outsourced IT workers. Just 2 years ago, J.P. Morgan agreed to a $5 billion outsourcing deal with IBM, at the time one of the largest in the U.S. A company spokesperson said the employees are being rehired due to a recent merger with Bank One, which he said strengthened J.P. Morgan's technology infrastructure.
On Wednesday morning, after a night-long occupation of a Canadian paper plant that closed unexpectedly, disheartened workers returned to their homes. 400 workers were out of a job when the New Brunswick Pulp and Paper plant announced it was suddenly closing Tuesday. The plant, owned by Parsons and Whitmore of New York, said the closing was due to the high cost of wood and rising Canadian dollar. Union representatives at the mill are encouraging the workers to contact local officials who they blame for allowing the company to leave New Brunswick too easily.
Today's Dow Bob Report. Working women spend twice as much time as working men taking care of children and doing housework, according to a recent survey by the U.S. Labor Department. 78% of women and 85% of men hold jobs, but only 19% of men reported doing housework daily, compared to two-thirds of working women. Women also spent an hour and a half caring for a family member. The average man spent only 50 minutes. You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.com.
the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
Recall when I said I'd leave no child behind. I guess I changed my mind.
Oh, George, change his mind?
Luckily, I bribed you with my tax cut con. The rich got richer, soon the surplus was gone.
Ah, yes.
Prosperity replaced by unemployment and debt. Who could ask for more? It may take amnesia for me to still please you in 2004.
Yeah. Welcome back, friends. 26 minutes before the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. 1-866-889-8894. A telephone number, Scott in Santa Fe, New Mexico on the line. Hey, Scott, what's up?
Hey, Tom. I was listening to what you were saying about kind of the collective cost of a civilized society, and I was just emailing the Kerry campaign, and I wanted to announce to your listeners the founding by myself of a new special interest group, which has four members currently. Those would be the four members of my family, my wife and two children, and it's a special interest group. We call it Air Breathers for Kerry Edwards.
That's great. That's great. And water drinkers and food eaters.
We do, yes. We avoided Earth Dwellers because that brings up the whole, you know, environmental movement and those
right.
extremists.
Right. Air Breathers for Bush for Kerry Edwards. I love it.
For Kerry. So if you breathe air, you know, you might want to consider membership. And the other thing, and I tried to get that sign into that that John Edwards rally, and unfortunately, it was confiscated.
Well, they confiscate all the signs, don't they? Because they could be used.
They
to
do.
Whap
yeah,
people over the
although,
head with.
Although that guy that you had on, Coro, he did have his sign out there, and he was not in a barbed wire cage.
Well, but it wasn't at a presidential or vice presidential speech. I mean, it was just
it was a vice presidential town hall meeting. I mean, Edwards was there, and he gave a 15-minute speech, Tom.
Oh, interesting.
But they didn't have him in a cage a half mile away. Unfortunately, I'm not going to say unfortunately. I think that everybody has a right to speak out.
Yeah, I do too. And I think everybody should have a right to carry a sign. And then you get into the question of, could the post on which a sign is nailed at the very end actually be a concealed rifle barrel, you know, the old 007 kind of stuff. And that's, the Secret Service is paranoid about presidential candidates getting shot. And there may be some legitimacy to that. Stranger things have happened. But people carrying an actual just paper sign, I think that ought to, I can't imagine why they would ban that. I can see where, if you've got a stick that's 3 feet long with something nailed to the end of it, that could conceivably be a weapon or, arguably,
Well, when I was at that rally, I'm a photographer here in Santa Fe, and I had a long zoom lens, and I kept looking up from my camera on the roof of the museums that was surrounded where he was speaking, and kept seeing these sharpshooters with their binoculars kind of looking over at me.
Yeah, well, that's good.
That was my paranoia anyway. It was intense.
There was
one other thing I wanted to warn you about.
Okay, go for it.
Okay, in that email to the Kerry campaign, I did forward your contact information. And I'm thinking that what you should do is get some of these Kerry officials from the campaign on the program to get some feedback directly from the listeners. And the guy I would recommend is Shrum, his main advisor, who's a big-time Democratic speechwriter, and he's one of the main advisors. And people are like, why is the campaign not tougher? I think you should get him on and ask him that.
Yeah. Well, I had Terry McAuliffe on the program a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, he's getting kind of tough.
Yeah, he actually, it was the last day at the RNC. In fact, it was when I was in New York I had him on the program. And he said that, he's going to take him on, and we'll see. I still think that it was an absolute terrible failure on the part of the Democratic National Committee and the Democratic Party in general not to have had the opposition information about the Swift Boat guys the day that those ads appeared. You cannot let that kind of stuff go out there. They should have, the day that those guys first appeared, they should have been on all the news shows going, this guy, John O'Neill, was hired personally by Chuck Colson, the head of the dirty tricks operation of Richard Nixon, and met with Nixon specifically for the purpose of assassinating the character of John Kerry back in 1972, and he's still doing it, and he's being funded by Republicans in Texas who are connected to the Bush administration and the Bush campaign. And they should have been laying this. It took them 20 days to start revealing this stuff. And it's nuts. I mean, the Republicans don't let that stuff get away. You know, the 60 Minutes, 10 minutes after 60 Minutes is off the air, they're attacking this website, actually coincidentally run by the Swiftboat Veterans guy, is attacking the veracity of these documents.
Well, yeah, and I think that, you know, for Rove, if you're on the defensive, Rove has won. That's his entire strategy.
Sure.
Before I forget, you
asked
earlier
in the week
when I called on Monday to remind you about hijackingcatastrophe.org. I highly recommend you get those guys on. They were just on in Santa Fe. There was a public fundraiser for the public radio show out here, KSFR. And they were overwhelmed with pledges and calls buying those DVDs as a charity for local community radio. And that opens tomorrow in Santa Fe at the Screen, and it's going like gangbusters.
That's
great.
I think
you guys have it on your website, but you got to get those guys on. They're amazing guests.
Hijackingcatastrophe.org.
Yes, sir.
Okay. It's
Thanks, Tom.
Actually, Louise just put the DVD in my hand. Thank you, Scott. Good to hear from you. Hijacking, the Media Education Foundation presents Hijacking 9/11, Hijacking Catastrophe, 9/11 Fear and the Selling of the American Empire, narrated by Julian Bond. I have not yet seen this. We literally just got it today. And we'll take a look at it. Maybe I believe that my recommended book for the month for on BuzzFlash.com, it looks like we're going to skip September. So in October is going to be Triumph of the Will, Leni Riefenstahl's Nazi propaganda masterpiece from 1934. And I think it's really important that people revisit that. But hijackingcatastrophe.org, as the movie, might be another good one. So we'll see how we go with that. We'll see how we go. Bush, remember George Bush saying we ought to do away with all these 527s? Well, it turns out they actually have filed a lawsuit not to stop the Swiftboat ads, but to stop MoveOn.org. Yep, sure enough. They filed the lawsuit. The Washington Post reports today a federal judge here in Washington, D.C., Wednesday, rejected a request from President Bush's campaign for an injunction against the Federal Election Commission that Bush attorneys hoped would ultimately halt the efforts of independent Democratic organizations working to defeat the president. Article by Carol Lenig. Bush's team pushed for FEC injunction denied. They want to stop the Democrats. They don't want to stop the Swiftboat guys. They just want to stop the Democrats. The judge said he was issuing his rejection from the bench so the president's team could immediately appeal to the U.S. Court of Appeals. So the judge in this case is sort of, you know, he knows that he can't, rule on this. I mean, it's crazy. So he's just kind of moving along very quickly. The suit accused the commission of failing to act on the Bush campaign's March complaint of allowing, quote, irreparable harm, end quote, by not stopping the activities of advocacy groups that support Democratic presidential nominee John F. Kerry. You will recall irreparable harm was the rationale that the Bush campaign used in Bush v. Gore before the Supreme Court to stop the recount or the continuing counting. Actually, it wasn't even a recount at that point, to stop the counting of the vote in Florida. They said irreparable harm would come about if the counting of the vote was not stopped. And they're using that again. They want to stop MoveOn.org, the Media Fund, and America Coming Together, ACT, claim that these groups are engaged in massive and ongoing violation of election laws. These groups have been kind of quiet lately. I have a feeling they've been holding their fire and will be until the last couple of weeks of the election. And then all hell's going to break loose on both sides. You're going to see 527s coming out of the woodwork like nothing you ever saw before in your life. And these guys, the Bush campaign, are trying to preemptively stop these particular three groups, the biggest of the 527s on the Democratic side, so that they'll control the airwaves, they'll control the dialogue, they'll control the debate in those critical 2 weeks before the election. Mark my words.
And the judge said he was rejecting the president's request based on, now get this, talk about an irony, on, quote, an impeccable decision by Judge Kenneth Starr, who decided, figuratively speaking, when the shoe was on the other foot. I mean, Clinton apparently had tried to stop Republicans from running ads against him, and Ken Starr was the judge at the time, and said, no, you can't do that. We have free speech in America. So it's very strange. Yeah, Starr was the federal appellate judge in 1985. Oh, it wasn't Clinton. That the court could not order the FEC to act more quickly on a Democratic congressman's complaint. Oh, interesting. Starr, of course, was the guy who persecuted, prosecuted, hounded, harassed the obsessive-compulsive follower of Bill Clinton, shall we say. 17 minutes before the hour, 1-866-889-8894. Telephone number, taxi driver number 12 in Santa Fe, New Mexico on the line. Hey, number 12, how's life there?
You know, it's really good that you brought up the 527 stuff, and it's absolutely ridiculous that you're even having this, to say this on the air. There's something in this country called the First Amendment, and I'd like to say that people like George Soros, who have dumped money into MoveOn.org, anybody who bought the line that campaign finance reform was something good is really naive. The thing is, a 60-day, I'll just say it again, okay? Everybody's saying, oh, yeah, it'll get big money out of politics. It'll muddle the First Amendment, and it's unconstitutional, and the thing needs to go in the garbage can.
I agree with you. Now, how about a middle ground? Or maybe this is so far off that you would not go for it at all. But what would you think about doing something like they have in England, where they say, if you want to run for political office, you or anybody on your side cannot spend more than $100,000. It's £100,000.
I don't care about the money. I don't care if they have to get a sandwich boy and walk up and down the street and they have, you know, are allowed no money. And if they're, you know, the money part doesn't bother me. What bothers me is the First
the
Amendment
speech.
Part.
Okay.
There's no provision in the Constitution about money.
Yeah, but see, the problem is that in 1978, in a Supreme Court decision called Boston versus Bilotti, First National Bank of Boston versus Bilotti, who was the Attorney General of the state of Massachusetts, the Supreme Court ruled. See, there was a law in Massachusetts that said that a corporation in Massachusetts cannot spend money on a political campaign unless it's about an issue that directly affects that corporation, in which case they could spend money to advocate their cause. And the First National Bank of Boston was spending money on a political campaign that apparently had nothing to do with the First National Bank, or at least obviously on the surface didn't. And I think his name was Frank Bilotti. The attorney general sued them, said, you can't do this. And they took it all the way to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court ruled that number one, corporations are persons, and therefore they have free speech rights, and number two, that money equals free speech, and therefore the government cannot restrict, number one, corporations from speaking out, and number two, them using money in the process of doing it. And that decision has made campaign finance reform of any sort virtually impossible.
Okay, here's the deal. I don't know if I could use through a whole lot of me, and I'll have to chew on that for a while to think about that. So I can't say I can give you an answer, but when it comes right down to it, I'm kind of an absolutist when it comes to free speech.
Yeah.
And if you and me decided to form some sort of, you know, issue advocacy group, we rented time at the local public access television station, the cable station or something like
mm-hmm.
that, there's a chance that could be considered a criminal offense, which is absolutely wrong.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. In fact, the conspiracy laws are written in such a way that if you and I conspired to walk across to jaywalk, we would commit a felony. You know, I mean, this welcome to the Patriot Act world. But
the Patriot Act, campaign finance reform, and that damned gun ban, they all need to go away and stay away. What we need in this country is more freedom for the people and a shorter leash on the government in all respects. And that's basically where I come from. And I got to go have a call right now.
Okay. Good one. Good one. Thanks, number 12. You know, I agree with you up to the point where I would say a shorter leash on the government and a shorter leash on corporate activity and the activity of money in the political arena. I think that what we should have is public financing of campaigns and that there should be an absolute ban on political advertising on television. And you're not going to hear even a debate about that on television because the TV industry makes $1 trillion. Yeah, $1 trillion. Could it be? That's my recollection. It can't be. It's got to be $100 billion. No, anyhow, the TV industry is making zillions of dollars, lots and lots of money, certainly hundreds of millions of dollars, perhaps billions of dollars, off political campaigns every 2 years. They make just this huge pile of cash.
and they're not going to give it up. Damon in Huntington, West Virginia on the line. Hey, Damon, welcome to the program.
Hey, Tom. I just think it's pretty funny how Bush wants to limit or get rid of these move-on ags and these 527s. But just yesterday here in West Virginia, the NRA started airing a half-hour infomercial. Or in the first minute, I think the guy's name's Wayne LaPierre of the NRA.
Yeah.
Calls Kerry a liar twice, and it doesn't stop for the entire length of the program.
Yeah, yeah. This is the thing. We have reached the point in the United States where those who have the most money have the loudest voice, and that is not what the founders had in mind. This is why I think that the Sherman Act in particular should be, you know, the Sherman Antitrust Act that says that when corporations reach a certain size, then they become inherently anti-competitive rather than competitive and destroy competition in the marketplace. And this is why I think that this definitely needs to be enforced against corporations that own newspapers, radio stations, television stations, and any other major mass media. Because we need to have local voices in America. And here I am, a national talk show host, but a local station can decide whether or not to carry it. And I think these decisions need to be made at the local level. And you know, having one big corporation own lots and lots of TV or radio stations or lots and lots of newspapers and having single voices, I don't think is democracy.
Well, you know, this is a local television station that showed it twice yesterday.
Yeah.
And the thing that's dangerous about that to West Virginia anyway, as far as politics goes, is this is the exact same way that Gore lost in 2000.
Yeah, it was the gun vote.
Yeah, the gun issued a few 30-second TV and radio ads saying that he was going to take away our guns. And there was no counterattack to it.
Yeah. Well, hopefully Kerry will respond appropriately, but, you know, at a certain level, you know, enough stuff sticks to the wall and all that. Damon, thanks for the call. Good to hear from you. I appreciate it. 10 minutes before the hour.
This is Vivionik Raskin. I'm the president and founder of the Organic Wine Company. What happened when you, Thomas, gave us a plug? The phone started ringing. The first person said, whatever it is that you're selling, I want to buy it. And for the next few hours, the phone rang nonstop. The people who listen to your program are what they call in the business my target audience, people who are conscious and responsible and try to do the right thing and try to think for themselves. I would encourage anyone to advertise on the Thomas Hartmann Show absolutely without question, whether that be on the national level or the local level, and you will absolutely get results. The way you can learn more about our imported organically grown wines from France is by calling us. The phone number is 1-888-ECO-WINE, or you can visit our site at www.ecowine.com.
How can contemporary America possibly compare with 1933 Germany? Find out in Tom Hartmann's brand new fully illustrated book, We the People, A Call to Take Back America. Through Tom's concise political analysis and Neil Cohn's vibrant illustrations, you'll observe an unsettling, if not shocking, perspective of America. You'll also hear what the founders of this country did to control corporate power. You'll be invited to consider how the American political system can be made more democratic, as well as comprehend the Project for the New American Century's vision for America. Here's what syndicated cartoonist Ted Rawl said after reading We the People.
An ambitious effort to explain everything that's wrong in America, how things got this way, and what should be done about it. We the People is the product of a brilliant and principled thinker.
We the People, A Call to Take Back America by Tom Hartmann. Available in bookstores everywhere.
Hi, this is Tom Hartmann. It's been said that if you scratch the surface of any issue of social or economic injustice, you'll find the issue of corporate power and corporate personhood. Join me for The Facts on September 24th. I'll be speaking in Portland, Oregon at the Unitarian Church on Main Street at 7 p.m. For more information, call Marcia at 503-665-3957. That's 503-665-3957.
Can you imagine a world in which all kids live healthy, safe, productive, and prosperous lives? Well, that world is within our grasp, and there's a way to reach it. It's called Econonomics. And to learn more, just pull up DennisWeaverNow.com and learn how to get a free report of our Econonomics educational program and how together we can build a world of prosperity without pollution. DennisWeaverNow.com. DennisWeaverNow.com. DennisWeaverNow.com.
A group hopes to persuade the federal government to drain a huge reservoir in Utah. I'm Steve Pomplin for Earthwatch Radio. When the Glen Canyon Dam was completed in 1966, it created Lake Powell, a vast reservoir stretching 186 miles from the dam in northern Arizona up through southeastern Utah. The project was controversial from the start because it submerged the scenic Glen Canyon, and it's still generating controversy today. A group of activists at the Glen Canyon Institute want to breach the dam, drain the reservoir, and let the Colorado River run free. Chip Ward writes about the effort in his new book, Hope's Horizon. He says the proposal offered in 1996 was first seen as outrageous.
Well, as it turns out, that proposal to drain Lake Powell makes an awful lot of sense. For one thing, Lake Powell traps huge amounts of sediment that have radically transformed the ecosystem downstream in the Grand Canyon. The reservoir drowned at one of the most beautiful canyon systems in the country, probably more beautiful than any national park that we have set aside. And even as a means of storing water, the lake, when it reached its fullest level, was seeing more evaporation off the surface area than water that was coming in.
Lake Powell loses 22 billion cubic feet of water to evaporation each year. Ward says that's become a critical issue.
Of course, at this point, because of this prolonged drought that we're experiencing in the West, Lake Powell has started to drain itself. It's actually down below half of its capacity at this point, and canyons that we have not seen for 20 years are suddenly reemerging from the lake and are accessible again.
The Glen Canyon proposal faces enormous resistance from Utah politicians as well as marina owners and other economic interests around Lake Powell. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Sea Grant Program at the University of Wisconsin.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Yeah, democracy from those folks in Tiananmen Square. Democracy coming to America. Tom Hartman here with you. Welcome back to the program. I have to share with you a short clip from Franklin Roosevelt talking about this very issue. He's talking about the economic royalists, the huge corporations who seek to subsume democratic power in America.
These economic royalists complain that we seek to overthrow the institutions of America. What they really complain of is that we seek to take away their power.
Where's Franklin Roosevelt when you need him now?
Our allegiance.
And we really need him.
And our allegiance to American institutions requires the overthrow of this kind of power.
The overthrow of this kind of power. 1-866-889-8894. Our telephone number very quickly here. We've just got a minute or so left in the show. Jeff in Santa Fe is on the line. Hey, Jeff, what's up?
Hey, Tom. Yeah, I tried to call when Richard Caro was on, but you guys ran out of time.
Yeah, sorry.
Anyway, I have the little, you know, the little piece of paper that he gives you when you confront him with something. I was the one that gave him the interview, the Polish interview. And it says, President Bush knowingly lied about any issue affecting the United States of America. So the one guy that called about...
So he does owe me $11,000.
Well, I think he'll...
For those who have just tuned in...
...with me because I was the one that called about him to begin with. So we're going to have to split the money.
Yeah, okay. For those who have just tuned in the first hour of our program, we had on a guy who was running around Santa Fe with a sign saying, if you can prove President Bush told a lie, I'll pay you $1,000. And we had him on, and I went through 10 or 11 of them, and a number of our callers had some, but they didn't meet his criteria.
Well, you know, the thing is, I don't think... I don't think there's anything you can say because he won't hold Bush responsible for anything he said.
Yeah.
Is the way I can see it, because I don't know how you can argue with we found the weapons of mass destruction. I mean, yeah. I don't know how you can argue with that. But yeah. It's funny. I called the other day talking about that they don't want to hear the truth. And when I talked to him on the phone, I pointed out, you know, he mentioned the artillery shells. The same thing he mentioned to you.
Yeah, I think he just had his information wrong. I'm willing to cut him some
slack. I told him that that happened later on, but he didn't bother to go check it to see that it was true or not.
Well, that would be useful. Jeff, we're out of time. Thanks for the call, and thanks for the point. I appreciate it. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program. Thanks to Louise for engineering our program today, or excuse me, for producing it. How come I'm always messing that up? Hey, thanks to Ira Gravatt for engineering it. Keep it straight here. Thanks to Shelby for streaming us around the planet on radiopower.org. And Ben at White Rose Society for our archives, and Mike Toth for our archives on TomHartman.com. The folks in our chat room for showing up. Jay for our music. Thanks to you for listening. It is much appreciated. Tomorrow we'll be broadcasting live from Grand Rapids. See you there then. Or here then.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Visit iowapeace.com for books on justice and peace. The Last Liberal Outlaw is Mike Palasek's new novel. Chuck Gregory with BlueEar.com had this to say. Palasek is at his best when writing about small-town America. It's a place he clearly loves, even as he pokes fun at its quirks and reveals the sickness that lies just below the surface. It's a place he knows, and he shares his knowledge in delightfully original ways, even as he cries out for change. We haven't had a writer like Palasek since Kurt Vonnegut was at his peak. Mike is an Iowa author, former federal prisoner for peace, small-town newspaper reporter, seminarian, and nominee for the U.S. House of Representatives in the Iowa Democratic Party 2000 election. For more information and more about Mike's other novels, visit iowapeace.com. The revolution won't be televised, but you can read about it. The Last Liberal Outlaw, A New American Revolution, is happening in the heart.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.